Hello everyone, this is once again the Team ATL broadcast, but we actually have a twist this time. I couldn't find an Atlanta Legion player, so we've got Jake Van Meter, neutralized from the forums, to do the Legion recording.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Cool. I know you recently got back from TempleCon, so you're still playing Legion this year?
I'm still playing Legion this year with the recent introduction of Iron Gauntlet. I don't know if it'll be solely Legion anymore. But as the year goes on, we'll see.
Yeah, I hear that. I've been having similar feelings about my circle. For all that, let's get straight into the review. I think those who have heard these before know how this goes. What we're going to do is we're just going to go through each model in the Legion of Everblight faction, and Jake will tell us what he thinks about the model, and then how many of his lists that it made it into. All right, ready, Jake?
I'm ready.
Alrighty, we're going to start off with the Blighted Nis Shepherd. What can you tell us about him?
It is one of our two fairy management options in Legion, and it makes a ton of lists. It's really useful whenever you take a Ravagor or any type of range-focused beast. So if you're doing a range-heavy list, normally Shepherds go with Ravagors. They stay back, they have a short range, and the Forsakens go with the melee heavies that are out front. So Shepherds typically make lists.
Do you find that they're always used, just for, fixing the Fury, or do you ever use them for, like, medicating and beast mastering?
It depends on the Warlock. If I'm using, a Rias tier list, the rearguard list, I do use it to sort of sling out my scything to make sure that I'm able to force them. So they're good in those situations, and in corner case scenarios, late game, I do use them to heal. So they are multi-purpose, and they're awesome.
Fair enough. Alright, so you've got 11 lists. How many did the Blighted Nis Shepherd made it into?
Blighted Nis Shepherd made it in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 lists.
Any of them he double up? Or she? I'm not really sure.
I doubled them up in Evale and Eloth.
That makes sense. Command 8 with no Fearless is kind of rough, but other than that, this is an enviable model.
It is. The only issues I have with it is when I'm playing it with Absalonia. Because I always forget that she's also an abomination, so I walk within 8 all the time, or within 3 all the time.
You have similar problems with E-Fags, or? I guess
he's a command 10, so it's a little bit easier.
Plus, he's very obviously an abomination, right?
Definitely.
Fair enough. Alright, moving on from the Shepherd, we're going to go to the Sorceress and Hellion. Also, of course, a Blighted Nis.
So the Hellion is a 4-point solo, with a really good Magic spray 8, magic 7. Gives all your winged beasts flight. 4 points, 10 life. Pretty durable, can take a couple shots. It doesn't really make too many of my list because those 4 points can be better spent towards, I feel like, a Nissa or anything else like that. So in all the lists I've made, it's probably only in one main deck, and that's a 35 point Evale list. And recently he was cited out for the new Afflictor.
I can't wait to hear about that. Have you ever found yourself using either the other non-spray spells, like the Blightstorm or the Wind Ravager?
The Wind Ravager I was using with Evale. If you're going against Krix, you can put Occultation on them and push them into Bile Thralls and things like that, and when they get within 5 inches to shoot you, they can't shoot.
That's nice. I'd never actually noticed that. Plus, he's cavalry, right? So +2 to charge attacks. That probably doesn't
Definitely.
Come up often.
And you have a ride-by-attack spray.
Huh. Fair point.
So it's corner case, and in Bethane's tier list, I will say I did try 2 of them in her tier list once, and at 3 points, they are very tolerable, and a fully boosted POW 12 spray is really good.
I mean, if nothing else, speed 8 large base models with reach will always have a place in the world running up to long gunners.
Definitely.
Presently you're not using him, or you bumped him from the one list that he was just in. Is there any like way you could get a Yuri sort of a figure that could give them something that would cause the Blighted Nis Sorceress to make it into more lists? Or,
I mean, really, with Bethane was the tilting point to say, hey, we want somebody that can utilize these and abuse what they can do. It made them cheaper for the tier list. The feat helps their fully boosted spray. So I feel like if you're really wanting to use them, for offensive output, you use them with Bethane. But if you just want to use them as a support role, all these double angel lists flying around right now with a lot of winged heavies or winged beasts in general can definitely use it.
Yeah, that charge without being forced is hard to come by in a Legion.
Fury mitigation's awesome.
It's weird that she's not fearless, large base, you'd think. fearless model, but no.
And the worst part of all is most of our solos are command 8, so
yeah.
I hate risking games on command checks of 8, especially with units like Raptors or the Hellion.
Mm. You're just like, oh, shoot, it broke. Well, we're done here. Fantastic. I love how things get scared of stuff that could never beat them anyway. It's like the knockdown deathjack, they're charging up to kill it, and then, nope, too scary. Oh, God, it's going to eat you all. All right, so moving on to the Forsaken. I've certainly been killed by this stupid thing a time or two. What's up with the Forsaken?
The Forsaken is by far our best Fury management model in our faction. It has great offensive output, has great threat with Blight Shroud, and it is used in almost every one of my lists that I'm able to take it in. You can't take it in the EVL tier list, but everything else, it's there.
Man, I hate that they're abominations. I've had things break from getting near the stupid Fury control solo before.
Hey, that's one of the upsides of having it, too, but we also have to worry about it in our list, too, so.
Well, if you take units. I've seen Legion lists or two where the only unit is the pot.
I mean, a lot of our units that are being used right now are fearless, but there are some lists I'm running currently with Bethane that have three units and only one of them is fearless.
Man, 14-14 is an enviable stat line for a two-pointer.
It can take a good blast damage shot and not die.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's always a plus. And its command is 8, too, so it's able to pull Fury off the frontline heavies. And that's what it really shines, is that you don't want your Shepherds getting up there because they're 1 point, they have one life, they die real easy.
I've had to blow up Venithrax before. That's always an eye-opener. You're like, oh, there's no upper bound on those dice. They just keep coming. Fantastic. Well, roll all 11.
Back in 2010, I was at the Daikon final table, and I was able to slipstream from some weird angle and get the Forsaken into a full focus Harby to win the game.
I love to hear about bad things happening to the Harbinger. It just makes me happy. I think you actually killed me with this thing once. I had like Mozar, and I ended up in your face, blew it up with a Forsaken.
I remember that.
Yeah, 2011, I want to say. It's a painful lesson that these solos are more dangerous than they look.
But, I mean, a lot of two-point solos in this game have that type of power. I mean, just like a Gormit. Yeah, he's not going to kill you, but, I mean, Black Oil is pretty much a death sentence anyway.
Yeah. The what are they called? The Hunter's Mark dudes. You're like, well, it's normally fairly insignificant, but every once in a while it changes the balance of the heavy trade.
Definitely. When you're using Ikaya and you have Hunter's Mark and Dogpile, you're charging an extra 4 inches. And without being forced, that makes your Fury go a lot longer, too.
Yeah, no doubt. Ikaya loves him. So you said the Forsaken is in every list, all 11?
It's in every list that I'm able to take it in. Some of the tier lists don't have them in it. But otherwise, I would say it's in either 9 or 10 of my 11 lists.
Fair enough. So definitely the most popular guy so far. Probably the most popular overall, but we'll see. Striders might give him some trouble. What about the Incubus?
So recently, Will Pagani is playing Legion 2.
Ooh.
And we discuss this all the time. He loves the Incubi. Personally, I haven't been too fond of the Incubi because you start the game without them in play, so you're 5 points, 10 points down, depending on how many you take. However, recently... just the sheer, you don't really understand where they're going to be and how threatening they are, because no matter what you do to them, they will always come into play, and they will always be able to hit you before you do anything.
Yeah.
So having that type of threat on an opponent can definitely keep them on tilt and make them move a little differently, which is always a plus. Personally for me, they don't make too many lists main, because they're just not my style. Other people have been including Ten recently and has been doing very well. Will Pagani will definitely vouch for that. So the only time I'm taking them is with Kallus, because he generates them, and the Afflictor.
So with Kallus, you don't actually buy Incubi, you just get them from his feet.
Yeah, there's no. I don't see any reason really to bring them main deck.
That's fair.
Main list.
I've certainly had bad experience with them. I had a 400-point battle one time with Brian, a whole... you know, faction-on-faction fight, and he had
reading about that.
10 of the stupid things, and, you know, you cannot clear an area because you kill all the enemy models, and you just look at these tokens scattered throughout your models, and you're like, well, going to be killing the same area again next round. I'm going to lose the guys who did this round.
And it's even worse when you're killing cheap fodder, too.
Yeah.
And then they place within 2 inches, and that threat range that they can generate is a lot, and with two base attacks, they definitely can make up their points.
Yeah, I mean, they're super mechanothralls with that Mat 7.
Too bad they're not half a point.
Yeah, well, I think the world can do with less half-point models. what do you say about the Strider Deathstalker?
The Strider Deathstalkers are fantastic solos. Most of my lists, I don't have range support via infantry. They're always double. Mm-hmm. I put two in most of my lists. So my Serene list has two. My Callus list has two. My Bethane list had two. They definitely take the place of Striders with UA if you're trying to point crunch more models in.
That makes sense. The Deathstalkers can, similar to the Striders, take out some enemies that are running up on you. And Legion has enough incidental shooting that I imagine you're never going to lack for like the ability to shoot down a running steelhead unit or whatever.
The good thing about them is that aiming the Rad 10, so they're very reliable. They have snipe, so they can take out high armor single wound troops. The only issue that they have is that they don't have hunter. So that's the only trade off you have to understand going into using two of them, which is 4 points over the 9 point Strider unit.
Oh, I know. I'm a druid player, man. I know all about that. they have the AD Stealth Pathfinder, which is my my calling card for great models. When I see that, I'm always thrilled.
So, I mean, they make a lot of my lists in pairs. At least half of them right now have two Deathstalkers.
And props for the Command 9 and Death 15. Never to be underestimated.
Death 15, Rat 8, Mat 7, POW 9.
Yeah, Mat 7. All rightness. So you said about half. Would that be 6 or 5?
I'd say 6.
Okay. 6. And are those doubles in each one? Or?
Yes.
Nice. Yeah, that's one of the Legion models that I actually envy from Circle. I'm like, man, I wish I had Strider Deathstalkers.
Hey, don't get me started on your Reeve Hunter.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Solo.
He's devastating.
Hey, just because he doesn't have snipe doesn't mean he can't fight.
Right, yeah. He's got a mat that's almost as high as your Deathstalkers.
Powerful charge.
Oh, yeah. It's happening. He could theoretically kill 6. I once got him to 4. It was monumental occasion. I think I had P. Krios in like a team game or something.
I mean, I think the Reeve Hunter is okay, but you guys have so many other options that sometimes it's just sidelined.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to think of ways that he can be great, but most games his lack of stealth and just, you know, really not long threat range gets him in trouble. But we're not Reeve Hunters. Why do you infect all my conversations? Spell Martyr, Spell Martyr. Tell me about the Spell Martyrs.
Pretty much any warlock that has a spell worth casting offensively. Like Spell Martyrs, even some of the warlocks that don't have spells offensively, like being able to keep a Spell Martyr in the back to run up and throw a spell across the battlefield to give it to like a friendly upkeep or something.
Yeah.
Specifically like P Veil. I like having upkeeping leash on something else or dropping it, having a Spell Martyr run up from across the board, give it to something on the other side of the board, and then move Veil and have it come off from like around a corner and then open up a charge lane.
Yeah.
So Spell Martyrs are very good. And if you have a good upkeep buff or just offensive output, they're typically in there, at least one. Out of all my lists, I probably have one, two, six, seven. In seven lists, at least one's in it.
Fair enough. If you had to choose between having Gallows Graves or having Spell Martyrs, which would you prefer?
I would have Spell Martyrs.
Yeah, me too. The ability to run around and get where you need to be is just huge.
It's the running. I mean, being able to run 12 inches and then cast spells is huge compared to a 5-inch blaze.
Yep. But I'm not complaining. I have an arc node of some sort, so I'm thrilled for that.
And Gallows Groves aren't that bad either. No. I mean, I understand that, you know, you have them and you're using what you have, but I've definitely been completely forgot about his little aura thing he does.
Yeah. Oops, none of them are going to make these tough checks. Roar.
Or I can't heal my beast.
Oh, well, that is, of course, living the dream, but I've never been able to pull that off. so the how many did you say that the Spell Martyrs were in?
Seven lists.
Seven lists, so that's more than the Deathstalkers, although probably not in pairs, right?
It depends. I mean, some of the lists have pairs. Saren has pairs, Bethane has pairs, and everything else is just about one.
That's fair.
Out of the 11 lists, too, it's based on the 11 warlocks that we have access to.
Yeah, no, I'm intimately familiar with how hard it is to make this stuff, because you find yourself wanting to change your lists just to say that models aren't, you know, because they start to look bad, and you're like, two lists for this guy, and you're like, I'm not saying he's bad, but it's hard to fit him in these lists.
Definitely.
Next up, we have the Warmonger Warchief. He used to be able to buff Thagrosh himself, but no longer does that.
Yeah, the Warchief in MK1 was an awesome model. He used to weed whack your the units, and it was kind of overpowered. Now he doesn't make too many lists. With the release of the Warspear UA, he makes a couple lists if you need a range buff or a map buff, which I don't see why Mass 7 needs any more buff. But I do run two in the Raya's Rearguard list right now.
Hmm. Well, it seems like with the Warspears giving prey, plus this guy's plus two, you'd have stupendous accuracy.
You do, and in the Raya's Rearguard, when they all have AD and stealth first turn, they can get off the board if you get first turn in relative safety and get great board position.
Yeah, and I mean, 12-17 is, Slaughterborn stats. I mean, that's 12-17, you have to be charging him or hitting him with a jack.
That's right.
Plus Terrorquazer, never hurts. So how many lists would you say that this guy makes it into currently?
He is in one, and there's two of them. So he's in my Raya's Rearguard list.
Fair enough. That's the one that came out in the No Quarter, right?
Back in 2011, yeah.
I remember seeing that and being like, huh, well, Raya's has a new tier. I mean, she is widely despised, but maybe this will bring her some new life. She gets Typhon, which is something.
It is.
All right, Anissa Rival coming up, the Talon of Everblight. I might not be pronouncing that right, but, you know, the girl in the elk.
Now, if she was not a character, she would be in every single list. The, you know, Prey, Poison, Snapfire, Stealth, 15-15 with 8 life, it's a ball-busting stat line with great offensive potential with Perry. However, she is a character, and because of that, right now, she doesn't make it into many lists. I only have one list that utilizes her, and it doesn't even have Raptors in it, so that says a lot.
Huh.
Use it in my Absalonia list, and it was just because I had 4 points and I didn't know what else to put in.
She's stealthy. I mean, there's a lot to be said for Anissa Rival.
She's a great model. You can use her in a Evail non-tier list with Raptors, and they can both be stealth. It's very effective, very, very high accuracy. So don't think you just have to use it with Absalonia, because that's definitely not the case.
No, I hear that. If I was like, man, who supports Cavalry the best, the answer I would come up with would not be Absalonia.
No.
But I've seen Anissa in the weirdest places, you know, back of the enemy's middle of the board, because she tends to flank, or the way I've seen her, and just get everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, she runs 18 inches, and then after that, she can move 9, shoot, and then move 5 more, so at that time, she's already in the back lines if nobody's dealing with her.
Yeah.
So she's picking apart your support pieces, putting damage on your living caster or warlock, and it's just a harasser.
Yeah, it's cool to me that she has Perry. I'm impressed by Perry.
She is definitely an A-plus model.
But only made into one list this time.
For me, yes.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Do you have, are there any solos in Domination that came? You guys got the Succubus, right?
We got the Succubus, which is our attachment, and it makes it into only two of my lists. It makes it in with my Bethane list, and also makes it in with Ethags.
Huh.
Everything else, I'm very particular with my list, and I like point crunching, and if I don't feel I need the free upkeep or the free Animus, then I just use those 2 points for a Deathstalker or Forsaken or something else.
Sure,
but it takes a little while playing for me to come over that. Recently, she was in my Rearguard list with Raya's until I realized, hey, you know, I didn't need that, and I took her out and put the Warspear UA in.
Not a bad call at all. I'm jealous that I only tossed 2 points.
It's awesome.
Does the Succubus, if you could trade the Succubus for a caster attachment from some other faction, which are the ones that you would trade it for?
Oh, wow. I would like the War Dog.
Who wouldn't, right? Man,
the War
Dog has killed so many things for mine.
The Squire. That's it, the War Dog or the Squire.
Wouldn't want to, what's it called, Scarlock?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the Scarlock, yeah. Never mind.
How about Troll Moses?
No.
Fair enough. I can't even remember what the circle. Oh, we have the Druid Wilder. Yeah. They're very similar.
I don't understand how that model's ability to remove Fury is a spell and the Shepherd is not.
Well, you know, hey. It's like the book Turning Off Magic isn't a spell, but other things that turn off magic is. It's just sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't.
Because, you know, pulling off Fury from your Woldrath was so overpowered.
Right, we can't do that. We'll just surround it with Shifting Stones and get it off next round with Serenity. what's it called? The thing that cracks me up the most in the spell non-spell is that if you are seduced by a Warward Siren, that's magic, and you can be protected by a Vanishing Ward. But if Madeline Corbeau seduces you, well, there's nothing that can be done about that.
I never really realized that.
Yeah, the seduce is a magic spell in one case and not in the other.
Consistency.
That's how it goes. I just think she's hotter. All right, so we're going back to units now. Here's a unit I've never seen. The Blighted Nyss Archers.
Oh, all right. Let me tell you a little story about these guys. In MK1, these guys were ball-busting good. The UA granted them poison mini-feet, and they could aim, and
nice.
They get additional shot, and they could waterfall these POW 11, 10, 11, 12, 13 poison arrows at you, and it was just overly powerful. Now, the UA grants them Pathfinder. To aim, they get additional shots, and they have covering fire. And not to mention that the models also look hideous.
Hey, whoa. That's suppressing fire, not covering fire. It's a huge difference in what it's called.
So these models currently for me make it in absolutely zero list. They're actually not even primed. They're in my little drawer full of miniatures, and I don't think the others come out.
I have a whole unit of Reeves that are very similar. Like, they occur when a new player is like, let's have a game. And you're like, boy, yeah, let me find something that might lose to you. Tactics Pathfinder. Ouch. They're Nesu, who are naturally Pathfinders.
They definitely took a hit when they went to MK2.
Yeah. At least the max unit is only 8 with, what's it called? A UA of 2. That's nice. CRA units tend to cost 10 for the max.
I mean, don't get me wrong, the ability, you know, whatever, the rerolling on range attacks isn't a bad ability, just these guys get outshined for Striders, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, an army that has Striders, you know, what are they going to use Nyss Archers for? But
yeah.
There they are, and they're not in any lists. Sorry, Nyss Archers. I wish we could find some hidden alchemy for them, but I'm thinking of nothing.
I guess you could use them with Peeloth, and you could aim, and you can sort of do two-man CRAs with Parasite, and they'll be POW 15s, I guess, and you get 2 shots. So there are some small little, I guess, synergies.
Yeah.
But in that situation, what's not going to be better?
Right. I mean, who's standing in range to get aimed at by the archers and parasited by Lilith? It's not also being killed with the battle.
I parasite you and harm you. I mean, a freaking gobber can kill you.
Yeah.
So...
Blighted Nyss Grotesques.
So, when these guys were first previewed, their models, I actually am one of the few people that don't mind the Jay Leno chins. I think they look great. I enjoyed painting them. Issue is, they're speed 5. So, at first I was using them with Rias with Dash, speed 6, ignoring free strikes, charge over stuff. It was good. In the grand scheme of things, when you compare them to Legionnaires and other equally costed models, they definitely don't pull their weight. Mat 5, they need gang to be present. They don't have reach. They're just not as good.
Yeah. Do they have 2 attacks each or no?
They only have 1.
All right. 1 claw. The other claw is, you know.
You're a 6-point unit. Flight is really good. But, I mean, Legionnaires, higher armor, Vengeance, more attacks for cheap units so you can take out the other person's tar pit. When you compare them to Legionnaires are better.
Yeah, Captain Feralor. So you're not putting the Grotesques in any lists?
I do play them from time to time in an Ethags tier list just to give them AD with Incubi, but I don't play them in anything, I would say, competitive.
I hear that. They're cool looking, though, and, you know, flight is just one of those cool powers that every once in a while is a big deal. You know, you're like, ha, Balder, I charge anyway. Your feet is no use to you now. Blighted Nyss Legionnaires. What do you got to say about the Blighted Nyss Legionnaires?
Blighted Nyss Legionnaires are one of the best cheap units we have in Legion, if not the best. 6 Excuse points, me. Vengeance. They're really useful with the pot because they're cheap bodies to put into the pot.
Mm.
When you start getting up the board and you're fighting other tar pits, Vengeance allows them to get above them with their extra attack if they're hitting. And they're just cheap, and they have CMA, so if you leave too many of them on the board, after a while, they can start inflicting damage on you.
4-6 reach is nothing to sneeze at.
With Vengeance, not at all.
Yeah.
The only issue is that they're speed 5, so in the grand scheme of Legion, they are considered slow.
Yeah, but speed 5 reach is pretty quick, and, I mean, they have, what's it called, they're fearless, which is, you know, not something everywhere.
So this is the unit that... takes the spawning bezel attachment.
How many armies do you bring Nis Legionnaires in?
It's in with Evail, Pythagrosh, 1, 2, Absalonia, 3.
Now you're truly a Team NTL podcaster. Eventually everyone counts out loud on the microphone.
I know, it's off the top of my head, they're probably in about 4 lists.
That's fair. Do you ever take Captain Feralor?
With Kallus I do, just because when you use Iron Zeal and you get up the board, you use Iron Zeal the turn before you feat, because you want to try to keep as many of them alive that turn as possible.
Right.
So that you generate incubi from them. So I take them with him, and that's pretty much it.
That's fair. I like these guys. They just look cool. I was going to say, if you have both them and Swordsman, the other player will get confused about what does what.
Definitely.
Ryas blends in there, too.
Attack these Reach non-Weapon Master guys, please.
Yeah. I like this unit next up. They remind me of Blood Trackers. What do you think about the Blighted Nis Hex Hunters? And, you know, their leader, Baal.
Now, a lot of people that play Legion love the Hex Hunters. They're magic weapons. They have Battle Wizard. They're very fast. They have Stealth. I mean, they have a slew of abilities that everybody loves.
Definitely.
However, personally for me, they make it in a couple lists. I like them with Pilov, because having the AD and then the feed, they can just plow through troops and get Hexbolt on targets. With Parasite, Pulse 16 has Hexbolt hurt a lot. And then, of course, they're with Bethane, just because her feed jives well with them. So, out of all the potential lists, they're only in 2 out of my 11. And that's just because I point crunch to the extreme to get everything I can in there. Otherwise, they would make an appearance in a lot more lists.
That's fair. When you take them, you bring Baal?
No.
Ooh.
Baal, he's 3 points. He gives a unit AD, which is amazing. Hunter, so they can just see through force and things like that. However, he has a very big target on his head. People love just drifting AoEs at him and just try to kill him. So I find that if he's not there and my unit isn't AD, that they're not dying to drifting AoEs right away. So I get more guys there in the long run.
Huh. We have a very opposite viewpoint. If I can get something AD, I almost always do it. Also, Command 8 is a kick in the teeth for a whole unit.
Yeah.
I'll complain on your behalf that Hunter should really let them ignore concealment and cover for their magic attacks.
That's
preposterous.
Yep, but what can you do?
Nothing.
And don't get me wrong, I mean, Baal, if he gets there, he completely beats face, Shadowbind.
Yeah, he's got Shadowbind.
It's ridiculous, but again, he has to get there.
Oh, you could actually Shadowbind 2 things. I never realized that.
Yeah.
It'd be excellent. What about the Blighted Nis Raptors?
The Raptors are one of our best units. They're fast. They threaten a long range. They have a great synergy with Anissa. Poison Arrows is devastating against Hordes, and then they're also charging Weapon Masters. So this is one of our top units. They're up there with Hex Hunters, Striders with UA. They are currently, in 2012, they were reserved for my reinforcements. In almost all my lists, so they didn't really make many main decks except for one. Now they're in one of my Evail non-tier lists, but I don't really play that much, and they're in my main deck P-Veil list.
Huh.
And then I have a tier 1 P-Lilith list that I'm in the works with right now that has 2 units.
Whoa, that's a lot of Nis. I normally hate the line shooting units, you know, units that shoot people and then just suck up the counter shot. But these guys are so fast, so long range, and with their light cab backing up, I really feel like they are the exception to the rule. This is an impressive unit, and with the +2 to hit, it's just even better with a Nis arrival.
Definitely, and even when it gets down to it, they have 2 base melee attacks, they have their mount, and they have their charging weapon master attack, so they're always going to threaten.
Yeah. I mean, this is an excellent cav unit.
I think one of the best in the game.
Yeah, it could be. I often think that the Horde side just got better cavalry than the others. The Tiger Cav in Scorn, the Buffalo Cav, and of course the Nis Raptors are all very impressive to me.
The Tharn.
Wolf Riders. I find them to be eclipsed by Trackers and Druids, but I have them. I've played them from time to time. It's hard to say which is the best cavalry unit, though.
Yeah, I do feel like the Horde's cavalry are all better. I mean, the Troll Long Riders.
Oh, God.
Those guys just beat face.
I mean, you look at the Cadoran guys, they're these knights on these horses, and they're, you know, the medieval ages, and there's, you know, mounds of plate armor and all this nonsense, and they would get run over by the Trollcav. You know, and the Trollcav will charge through them.
And all you have to do is take Horthal to just grant them their ability. So having, you know, boosted impact attack rolls and things like that is just ridiculous.
And I love that Horthal himself is as elsewhere. Here, one sec. Hold on just a minute. Sorry about that. Someone was knocking at my door. I thought it was my landlord, but apparently not. I guess I'll edit that out. Are you still here?
Oh, I'm still here.
Excellent. So we were kind of musing on cavalry. After them, I think, is the actual weapon crew of the Legion. The dreaded Scather template thingy.
So, artillery in general in Hordes is not really used. Every once in a while, you'll catch a glimpse of one of them being brought in. The Scorn Catapult. I can honestly tell you I've never seen it. the Trollkin one it's okay. I mean, a slam on hit is pretty good.
Yeah.
However, with the Scather crew up until recently when Fat Asian was discussing it and bringing it up, last year I was shooting my own heavies with Ravagors to center a template on them, but we have a 3-point artillery unit that can do it for, you know, 7 less points.
True.
So I've been using it in a couple of just to see if I could get it to work right, and it does work in some. But again, I like point crunching a lot, so in most of them it ends up not being kept in.
I mean, it is just so very vulnerable. You know, it's two men, and they're def 13, and they got 1 hit point.
They do, but it is range 15, pow 14, so it is, you know, when they shoot my heavies in the back, they only need double ones to hit them, like a Scything or a Kearney, and they're one less pow, so they have a less chance of dealing damage to.
Not like, oops, boxcars. Thanks, dude.
My Ravagers love that.
Yeah. Damage type corrosion, that's no big. Very few things are immune to corrosion. I think
it has the Scather crew too, so I mean the Scather template. That's really huge when it comes to board position and mitigating just spots on the board.
Oh no, yeah, the Scather template is a very big deal. But is it 3 points of a big deal? Tough choice.
Yeah, it is.
You said you got it in two lists?
I have it in one list right now.
Oops.
It is in my Absalonia list.
It has a minimum range. I did not know that.
6.
I imagine that doesn't come up often.
It does not.
Absalonia has... Well, it sounds like a fascinating list. She's got things that you wouldn't expect with her.
It's a general list. That's all it is.
Can't wait to see that one. What do you think about these Blighted Nyss Striders?
They are... If I had to say it, they're probably our best ranged unit in the faction. Right next to Raptors. Raptors deal more damage. These guys just have... They get through cover, they see through forest, they harass a little bit better in the grand scheme of things.
They're AD,
1511s.
Oof.
They're everything you want from an AD harassing unit.
Reform.
With reform.
And hunter. God, druids hate these guys.
So these guys are in my Bethane list, they're in my Pthags list, those are the two lists that they're in right now. These guys used to be in many more lists, but things change over time.
I hear that. I find that as Hordes gets older, more and more beasts come out, and it's so hard to fit infantry in.
That's weird, because I find that with more releases, we end up taking more units in Legion lists now compared to what we used to.
Huh. Well, this is a potato-potato situation, I imagine. Although the appearance of Gargossals has, to my mind... forced me to move away from the light-hitting circle infantry and towards more beasts. It might be the opposite in Legion.
No, it's still there.
Yeah. I imagine you guys feel the same frustration we do when they're like, it's a Colossal with a defensive upkeep. And you're like, okay.
I mean, we have some Warlocks that can take care of it. I mean, if they have an upkeep spell on them, Evale can strip it, but she doesn't bring any damage buff to the faction, so you're just relying on your heavies and your army to power through it. Then you have guys like Pythagorosh, unless you're taking a Naga, then you're just damage buffing, and you're just you know, trying to damage buff through his buff, and it's like a trade-off.
Yeah.
So.
At least they have dreadful, defenses. Except for the Legion, when all the Gargossil's defenses are, you know, single digit.
Stormall's a 10.
Okay, that's fair, I suppose.
So, I mean, my Ravagers have had to fight it, and they've missed it.
Yeah. Unfortunately. Like, how did you miss it? It's half of your horizon. I mean, just swing in any direction, you'll probably hit it.
Because Ravagers have pillows for hands.
Yeah, you can't trust Ravagor. My favorite is that they refuse to push the Warlock. Like, whoa, I couldn't possibly attack you, Lil. She's like, I could walk and I could parasite, or that could not happen. She's like, I couldn't possibly hurt you. Damn it. Reform, of course, for this unit. That's awesome.
It is only granted, so once he's dead,
that's true.
You no longer get it. So, but yeah, Reform's definitely a great ability. And then they have the synergy with the Deathstalker that allows them to move 2 inches when they kill something.
Yeah.
But again, since I point crunch a lot, it's really hard for me to have a Deathstalker and them in the list. Either 2 Deathstalkers or the Unos Striders.
Yeah, I hear that. That's kind of like a superfluous amount of Powtens, you know. If Powtens were going to work, you'd have got it done with the 4 of them.
Definitely.
And then we go on to the next one. We've got Blighted Nyss Swordsman.
So this unit in any other faction would be run so much. A 5-8 unit, speed 6, power 11, weapon master, mat 7. That's like
F-14.
A Menoth stat line damage output right there.
But better, right? Because the Menoth guys don't have good defense.
Yeah, they're 12s. So, I mean, these guys with the right list, like Pthag's build with Fog of War can get them there. 16, 13s. The defense 13 can help them against blasts.
Their UA is not shabby.
Their UA is not shabby, but he is 3 points.
True.
And again, since I point crunch everything, he doesn't make it in unless he's free, typically. Even in my Callus list that runs 2 units, I don't have one of those.
Yeah, they are fearless, so they don't need to get the +1 command.
So I run Swordsman currently in 2 lists. They're in my Callus list and my Rias rearguard list.
That's fair. 2 is a fair number. Did I remember to ask how many lists had the Striders in them?
2.
Fair enough. I like the swordsmen. They just look cool. their quote is hilarious. The stillness within stillness is false. If anyone said that to me, I would just, blink at them. Like, what? But then, they are Blighted Nyss. I imagine that the dragon tells them what they need to know.
I mean, the swordsmen are definitely some of the better looking Nyss, if I had to say so.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely compared to Blighted Archers. Those things look stupid.
Well, I mean, the whole Legion line is very much like either you go in for the sort of spiky Klingon samurai vibe or you don't. You know, look at our chins of death and you're like, well, I think that's cool. Or you don't.
I'm just going to run these beasts. Yes.
This guy has a dress on. I'm talking about the abbot. He's like, I don't know what's up with that. He lives in the woods and he wears a dress.
I mean, the UA in a Rias rearguard list with cleave and overtake and the feet, they can definitely power through a lot of models.
True.
So, I mean, just because I don't take the main, unless they're free, doesn't mean that they're not good. They're definitely good in the right situations.
Yeah, I mean, they're weapon masters even the rest of the time, you know. If you don't get to power through a bunch of dudes, you're still killing pretty much everything you touch.
That's right.
Alright, stepping on to the next one. What about Blighted Ogryn Warmongers?
The Warmongers are definitely not played as much at all. Even with a Pthag's like theme force, you take them because you have to. But now, with the release of the Warspear UA, you can just take 2 units of Warspears with UA instead. The Warspear, or the Warmongers make it into one list, and it's the Rias rearguard list, and they're only there because of the interaction with the feet and their ability to clean out a lot of troops.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense that Rias' feet with a Berserk unit would be pretty awesome.
Yes.
And being another unit of Terracause is never terrible, but,
No, I mean, if you're running a bunch of Ogryn and you have 4, 5, 6 Terracausing entities on the board, eventually something's gonna break.
Yeah. Unless you're up against Krix, in which case they just laugh at you. But,
they do.
5-8 for 3-5 is the same as the Skinwalkers that I have, and I imagine they get used about as much.
I mean, for 8 points for 5 guys and they're 12-16 with 8 wounds, I mean, it's not bad. It's just
a lot of meat on the
hoof. Overshined.
And you don't have an armor buff, really, for the most part, that's not going to be put on a beast instead.
Yeah, we just have a passive 1 and then just 1 armor buff.
Yeah. I guess they could be body shields for Thags, but he probably doesn't really need that.
Yeah, they could be body shields for Thags. They could be used in Kallus with dark items and his unyielding thing. You can get him up to armor 18. And then you have Dragon's Blood.
So. Yeah, that's about the limit, I guess. Even arm 18. Yeah, no, arm 18 is about the threshold of I'm starting to get tough to kill with 8 wounds.
But in that situation, for one more point, why wouldn't you take Gatorman?
Oh, yeah. Well, after the units, we'll go around to minions. I'd forgotten about them, but of course we should be checking minions, too. And yes, this is the same thing the Circle suffers from. I'm like, man, you werewolves are really cool. Too bad you're not dinosaur
men.
Like, I sure wish you were reptiles. What about our Warspear brethren? They're pretty cool.
Yeah, the Warspears up until the release of the UA didn't get much play either. However, now that we have the UA that grants them prey for 2 points and relentless charge, they're definitely seeing a lot more play. You see 2 units with P Thags. You're starting to see them with P Lilith, Parasite, Prey. They get up to POW 18. That's, you know, that unit, if they charge a Colossal, like a Conquest, they can definitely trash it in one round.
I mean, it's got to be said that they have set defense. That's a significant fact.
Definitely. I mean, I play against a lot of people who forget about that.
Like, I'm going to charge them with my Doom Reavers. Need 5s. You're like, no, you need 7s. Yeah.
So, I mean, they're 5-8s like the Warmongers. They have Assault, which is good. Rat 5 isn't the best. But when you're going in at low defense targets, you know, you can rely on the 5 to hit a 10, maybe hit a 12.
And can't you run the Chieftain out in front of them if you want really to, you know, roll for those Assaults?
Yeah, normally I just keep the Chieftains on the flanks so that they can try to get line of sight. Because it's really hard to get the guy up in front and have them not charged and turned to face.
Yeah.
And keep him in line of sight sometimes.
It's the Rengrave problem.
So these guys currently make it in my Riot regardless. They're in my Bethane list right now. They're in one of my P-Thag Rosh lists. So they are in 3 lists. And then I'm making 1 P-Lil list with them. So 4.
Fair enough. They definitely seem pretty good. I like the fact that, what's it called? They've got enough hit points that you need to charge them, but set defense means charging them is kind of icky.
Yeah, those Mat 6 guys who really want to put the damage through are now missing on above average.
Yeah. But, they suffer from the whole medium base, you know, Gatorman issue.
Definitely.
All right, so we've got their number of lists. What do you say about the Black Frost Shard? I remember there was a lot of agony when this unit came out because other factions hadn't got their character trios yet.
This unit is... I greatly enjoy it. I think it's a really good unit. They make it in my Elo list. They make it in my P-Thag list mainly. Every once in a while, I'll throw them in my Bethane list just for fun. And then if you really want a lot of damage output, you can put them in your P-Lilith list. So they've made 4 of my lists consistently. With P-Thagrosh, his biggest issue is he has no defense debuffs or mat increasers.
Mm-hmm.
So you keep them behind your heavies. You move them up and ice cage a heavy so that your Scythian now is mat 8 on their 14 or their 12. So it definitely pushes through and allows your heavies to take out other heavies.
Yeah, I mean, they're a ranged debuffer unit, and that's a big deal. If you kiss something, or you ice bolt something twice, put the kiss on it, +4/+2 is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
They can be stealthy. I mean, they've got ice bolts. Everything about these guys is great.
They do everything, but the main list they make it in is my P-Thags list, for that reason.
Yeah, because they let his heavies kill enemy heavies.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as he can begin the trade with his feet, P-Thags ought to come out on top in the end.
Yeah.
I also like them just being immune to cold. Every once in a while, that's a big deal. It's one of those abilities that is very rarely coming up.
I was at TempleCon playing in Hardcore, and I went for an assassination run and failed, and I got charged by P-Sorsha, and she didn't kill me, and I was playing P-Vale. And at the end, he walks up his Grey Lords and tries to spray me, and I'm like, ha ha ha, I'm immune to cold.
None of that. Yeah, they were also part of the single most, like, illegal... Well, no, it wasn't them, it was Grey Lord Turnians. I had somebody walk Grey Lord Turnians up into the Druids, no casting aura, and be like, I'm going to cast 3 ice cages at your Circle Battle Engine so that it freezes. And I was like, you can't cast spells, you can't target that thing. If you could, it couldn't be stationary because it's a battle engine, and it's immune to cold. It was illegal in like 4 fucking levels.
So this unit, and you can't. They also have Pathfinder and their Weapon Master. So I mean, they do it all.
Yeah, I like they can turn stealthy too. That's certainly something to be discussed.
At 5 points, I mean, you compare it to some other units like Black Frost Shard, things like that, and people get kind of upset, but they provide a different role, something that we didn't have.
Sorry, you said the Black Frost Shard can compare to the Black Frost Shard. Who were you? Were you thinking of the Wither Shadow or?
Black 13th.
Ah, well, who can compare to the Black 13th?
Yeah.
That unit is nonsense. Fair enough. And they have a sizable showing in your list. And the last unit is one I've seen you use a couple times. You kind of made it a little bit famous on the internet. What about the Spawning Vessel?
The Spawning Vessel makes most of my lists. It's, what can I say, it's a 3 point for the full unit. And it definitely, in a single game, can put out triple its point value at sometimes, if not more.
Yeah.
I might have made it more noticeable in a lot of net lists or whatever you want to call them. However, I was all down on that model to begin with until Jeremy Miller had a really good showing with it at TempleCon 2010, and he was talking to me about it. So then he got me on the bandwagon, and that's when I started using it.
Credit where it's due there. The first place it came to my attention was we do a lot of just big games in Atlanta, and there was a large game between three of us, and one flank of the Legion player, Brian, was getting overrun. He sent all his stuff over there to handle it, and on the other flank there was just P-Vale and, like, Typhon and a Spawning Vessel. And she held that thing for, like, 3 rounds against this Kadoran army because the Spawning Vessel would not stop creating Shredders.
The Spawning Vessel is just... it's relentless. It's you move it 6 inches, and then you play something within three, so then you have the base size, so it's like 10 inches right there.
Yep.
And then it can activate and charge. I mean, a Stinger's threat range is something like 21 inches with it. It's just annoying. It always makes up its point value. The threat vectors are insane. So out of all the things in Legion, this is an A++ model.
It's amazing. The fact that it's, if it's disabled, it can immediately make a special action, like, say, spawning a monster. Can be anywhere, or, you know, just dumps it wherever you want. Very aggravating.
I played against a Zerkova player once, and she feeded on me and then killed it, and it prevents special actions.
I guess there is one way to stop it from happening. You can't even consume it because it's a construct, and it's medium-based.
Medium-based.
So I think that's all the Legion units, but before we go on, let's go back and talk about some minions. What do you think about the minion war beasts? Are there any of those that you'd like to take in the Legion?
None that I can think of off the top of my head.
Never used Wrong-Eyed Snapjaw?
I never use Wrong-Eyed Snapjaw. I don't use Rorsch and Brine, although if you take Rorsch and Brine, you can take a Roadhog and have access to Sprint in your faction if you really need it. So I've thought about doing it. I haven't done it yet because I don't know how effective it is taking a 19-point side thing to have Sprint.
Yeah, I mean, without a Gorax, Brian doesn't really do the work that he needs to do, you know?
Definitely.
But I am a little bit surprised to hear you haven't used, what's it called, that guy there, the Gator, just because the Unshootable Heavy is classic.
No, I mean, it is definitely effective. It's just, when you're not in faction, you don't benefit from a lot of the feats.
Yeah.
Or spells from Legion.
You don't want to be the only guy who doesn't have Signs and Portents when an Epic Thagrosh goes on his rampage.
Definitely.
Fair enough. What do you think about solos? Let's see. What do you think about the Feralgeist?
Feralgeist is an awesome model. It makes it in my Lilith list, and it was in my Sarian list for a while. Big thing about Lilith is that she doesn't want to be in the center of the board ever, so having an incorporative model that can toe zone on the very far edge of the board is definitely what you need to be able to prolong a scenario loss.
I have occasionally been going up against Legion, and, you know, they're more traditional Legion than the modern stuff, and be like, Feralgeist stands in the zone. Unless Rice wants to come and punch it, you're not taking any points.
Definitely. I mean, it's a saving model, pretty much. You can also jump into your Warbeast and things like that if you need it.
I've never really been able to... Well, I mean, I've once or twice, but Feralgeist, to my mind, are mostly just ghosts. They run around and be incorporeal.
And be annoying.
It's awesome when they get in a beast, especially if it's an enemy beast. That's just totally cool. But I never have that go off. What do you think about the Totem Hunter?
The Totem Hunter, he doesn't really do much in my eyes. Like they added prey and the leap and the hunter. It's good for 3 points because he can put out a lot of damage. Just he gets overshined for some of the in-faction models, such as I could take 2 Deathstalkers for 1 more point.
Okay.
I could take a Nissa for 1 more point. With Kallus, you can give him Ignite. With Bethany, you can give him Ashen Veil, or you can give him Carnivore to make his mat go up a little higher.
Well,
but
it's already 8.
It can be up to 12.
Rah! Now I'm hitting you.
Just in the grand scheme of things, it just might not be what's needed.
What do you think about
better mileage out of other models in faction?
That's fair. I often find myself, you know, after Circle Game being like, that white man could have been a Totem Hunter. Could have been either way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about his buddies, the frogs? The 80
self
Pathfinders?
Never played them.
But croak hunting, they have reach. If the enemy hits them and doesn't kill them, you get corroded.
I don't think I've ever... I'm sorry, I played one game where I hit them and did not kill them.
Were you then corroded?
I was then corroded.
Did you then get killed on their turn before the corrosion mattered?
<That's> My beast took 1 point of damage.
they're actually kind of respectable, but I could see that in a faction that has, you know, the Striders and such, it might be a really hard sell to be like, then, frogs!
But they do have poison, it's not that bad.
No, reach on a solo is always a great coming up thing.
Anytime you're starting to roll 4 dice for damage, you can spike those dice and do a ton of damage.
The other guy's like, 23, huh? Ugh. we had a player last night, and out of his first 7 dice, there was one that was not a 6. And I was like, well, this is ominous. This game's going to be quick.
Thanks for the fun.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, what are other cool spells? Do you ever use the pigs that give extra range on spells?
MK1, they were used religiously in a lot of lists.
Yeah.
Now, not so much. Now with the spell martyrs, we can take 2 spell martyrs for the min unit, and they can reach out and touch somebody from very far away. So an argument could be made that you can take them with a spawning vessel, so that there's extra bodies to throw in. It's just, I've never had that come up.
Yeah, I've used them in a similar way with Cassius. Let's see. Is there any other minions that I'm not thinking of? Minion solos. Can you tell me? Ooh, the Gator Man who turns you guys undead. Does he show up?
He shows up in one list. I have a Bethane incarnation that he is in there to make sure my Hex Hunters don't run away.
I'm going to pull a Kramer here. Why don't you just tell me the minion solos that you use?
Him.
Fair enough. Let's move on to the more fertile territory of minion units. I can think of at least one that you're going to definitely use. And I'm talking, of course... No, Bogtrogs, man. Bogtrogs! You don't have any kind of ambush in the Legion.
So, up until recently, I haven't really used Bogtrogs. However, I had one Kallus that I made that had 2 units in it. And, believe it or not, when you have Bogtrogs ambushing from the side of the board that you can throw Ignite on, you don't need Dark Guidance in order to make them hit. They can CMA... It'll be mat 10, pow 15 with ignite, and then you feet. Now you have these Bogtrogs in your face with reach that if you kill him, you give me incubi because his feet affects all friendly models.
Huh, and they can often get backstrikes.
Definitely. So they do make their way into that list right now, and that's the big list they're in.
You know, that seemed a really long shot, but that worked. Let's see what else might work. What do you think about brigands?
They don't make any of my lists. I forgot that unit's in the game until I picked up pigs recently really cheap.
Hey, Carver. Carver can make them work. Slaughterhousers?
I do have a unit actually right in front of me that I painted, and they have not made a Legion list yet. I thought about playing them in some list with, like, Occultation just for fun, or even with Kallus, because having a cleanup unit to follow up behind everything might be okay. But they are kind of expensive, so they definitely get overshined or outshined by a lot of other models we have in Legion.
That's fair. I kind of like them with solid ground. Just
a bit.
Steady tough is one of those cool things. But,
it's just, are they 12-15 or 12-14?
I think they're 12-15. Yeah, they got victim stats. In Atlanta, we use the phrase victim stats to denote 12-15.
That's funny. I've never heard that.
Yeah, it's the stats that is hit by everything and killed by everything. You know, if you're 12-15, you're probably killed by whatever shoots at you or punches you or whatever, you know. You don't want to have 12-15.
I like the term, victim stats.
Any other units? Oh, right, the main one. How many lists do you have Gator Men in?
They are in some Pathetic lists. They are in... I've run them in a couple Kalos lists. I've had them in a Bethane list. The Bethane list is the big one because Ash and Vale and Dirge, defense 15.
How can you miss them? They're 10 feet long.
So, I mean, these guys, they definitely pull some weight. Up until recently, they were in there. I took them out for War Spears with UA, but who knows if they're going to be switched back.
I'm about to do a similar thing. I'm having painted up my Skinwalker UA, and he's going to be traded out. You know, I'm going to dump some Gatorman for the Skinwalker unit and try to
see if he pulls his weight and if it's worth it.
I mean, the models are so cool that if they're remotely equal to the Gatorman, I'll bring them along. But
just
previously,
the utility of the Gatorman is so rough to dismiss. They have Dirge, they have the Pathfinder, then they have rerolls. I mean,
just the extra 2 inches of charging living models is unbelievable.
Too.
And their terror. Oh God! I mean, everything about them is wonderful. That stat line.
They're
the two
best
attacks.
Medium-based unit in the game, period.
Let me think. Is there any, like... They're definitely the best fighting melee unit that I see regularly. I'm trying to think of any, like, off-the-wall melee unit, you know, or medium-based unit that you wouldn't think of. But nothing's coming to mind. You might be right about that. Yeah,
and then
I think
you
are.
And take Scorn, and they have Taskmasters. Holy crap.
Oh, God. Taskmasters, because what we needed was better Gatorman. Oof.
And then other than Gatorman, the only other one I can think about that I take on a semi-regular basis is the Gobbers, Swamp Gobbers.
Oh, yeah, Swamp Gobbers. How'd I forget them? I think of them more like a solo. But, yeah, Swamp Gobbers are the first one-point thing I reach for.
Them and Feral Guys, but it really depends on the list. They're in my Saurian list, and it was going to be a Feral Guys, and I just thought about the range heavy meta and how I could use it to protect myself against those weird matchups like a pop and drop, and that's when it came in.
No, I mean, I feel like in a meta that has E-Gaspy, it frequently behooves you to have your Warlock completely out of line of sight.
Definitely, I can.
Because you're like, I'm starting to win. Gaspy's just going to send 10 Banes my way. If I can be behind a cloud from this guy in like a forest or another cloud or something, I can't lose in that manner. Now, I might still lose when they eat on my War Beast, but I would really like not to have the other player have the option to just feed me off the table.
Definitely.
And the same holds true for, you know, the sniper chick's assassination, just all that stuff, you know. Being able to be like, my caster is spending all but one fury or whatever and is out of line of sight is so big for 1 point.
I completely agree.
Fair enough. I think we've gone through all of the units now and the solos. The time has come to move on to War Beasts, which is, I think, why people get in Legion. You guys have the dragons. I mean, I have werewolves, but I'll admit that nobody is cooler than Legion when it comes to beasts.
I mean, dating back to MK1, we ran completely 100% beast lists. One of the biggest lists in MK1 was P-Vale, 3 Shredders, 3 Seraphs, and a Carnivian. No fury support at all.
Whatever, man. Even if they're frenzy, they'll still kick your ass.
That's right. Frenzy rules MK1, baby.
Oh, yeah. Let's make all the attacks. What? But I ag... all right, so here's our first guy, the Harrier. Legion Lesser War Beast. What do you got to say about the Harrier?
The Lesser War Beasts were first Legion's thing, and it's really hard to balance such a low-costed War Beast. The Harrier doesn't make it into too many lists mainstream. It's in my Evail Tier 4 list because I have to fulfill the requirement of 3 Wing Beasts, and it was really cheap. Otherwise, normally it's one of the first things I reach for from the spawning vessel. To get rid of high defense solos, with Saurine, it can charge in, it can hit something with True Strike, sprint to a good position so that you can Blightbringer. I mean, it has a definite, utility to it that's very, very powerful.
So currently, it's only mainlined in one, but you often create them from the pot.
Definitely.
That makes sense. It's a good looking thing. I think it's better than the Razor Boar. In terms of, you know, being a
the Razor Boar got kind of got the stick on everything because he was a 2-point model and they didn't want him to be as good as a Shredder because the Shredder is really like a 2.5 model.
You can just say 3. I won't judge you.
3, okay, 3.
well also, you know, they got Carver. I mean, it's just pigs. but the Harrier, use it in one list. That's, you know, I didn't even realize it had sprint naturally. That's a pretty cool thing. It's got flight. There's something going on there.
So you use it with a pot, you move up, you spawn the Harrier. It can True Strike charge and then sprint. And with Evail, you can put Refuge on it too, and it hits, sprints, refuges, and gets really far into, you know, some scenario zones.
That's like 36 inches. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Wow. Alright, well let's look to its partner in crime, slightly more popular, the Pac-Man Warbeast here. What do you have to say about the Shredder?
Shredder is the best lesser Warbeast in the game. Unless it's a specific focus list, each list always has one in it. At least one. If not multiple.
So, probably 8 or 9 lists?
9.
Nice.
The only 2 Warlocks I don't take it with are Pythagoras because I value Spiny Growth more, and E. Lilith because I don't think people should be getting that close to me to hurt me.
I love the fact that Tenacity, when cast by the Shredder, is not a spell.
I do like that.
So Blessed doesn't ignore it. This Mage Hunter Strike Force, may they rest in 1,000 pieces, do not ignore it. You can just have Tenacity. Nothing to be done about it.
And that's I like that.
Oh, man. So, do you ever have it fight and not go rabid?
Once in a while. I mean, at the late game, if they're just killing solos that are wandering too far forward or off to the side, sometimes I'm able to pull the Fury off them, but they are definitely not the first model I pull Fury from.
Yeah.
And it usually results in them biting my own guys and I roll really high in my damage roll, or they eat a really awesome solo that I need, but it happens.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're gonna do Shredders, then that's just a thing that occurs. Do you ever play the infamous Shredder Swarm?
I do, with Ethags. I still have a very hard time making a list that's not Shredder Swarm with him, because it's just so effective. Maybe the Colossals have sort of pushed that back a little bit. I do have a list that I'm using right now that we'll go over in a bit that does not focus on Shredder Swarm.
Yeah, I have never actually battled that list, but I mean, I think everyone sits down at a point in time and is like, all right, I can handle, you know, the Peace Guard Infantry Blitz, which means you can basically handle any Infantry Blitz. I can take on P. Morgul's, you know, Beast Heavy Army, so that's kind of a good thing for Beast Heavy Armies. Oh yeah, what about a million Shredders?
They chew through infantry and they can kill the armor 18 heavies or 17 heavies that Circle has.
Yep. And then you have to remember Ethag's feet, and Manifest Destiny with them is just grotesque.
Definitely.
I love that they have snacking, and it's not restricted by, like, size. They can eat, you know, Warp Wolves or Titans or what have you. Like, wow.
Snack a Gargantuan.
Of course, they could. They could eat the Mountain King. Heck, they probably could eat the Mountain King. They're the size of his whelps, they'll devour him.
But yeah, the Shredders are some of the best models in the game.
Yeah, I love the actual modeling on them. They just look great. Coming to this last guy here, we got the Stinger. How many lists did he make it into?
He is main listed in no lists. He comes from the pot as a situational piece when I need him. He only ever made a list once, and it was with P-Vale. And they stood back in my lines, waited for models to jam me, and I would actually utilize their spray to clear models off me.
You cast, what's it called, Insight, the spray becomes super accurate.
It's a 6-12, I mean, that kills a lot of that jammy infantry that's going to be up in your face.
I had a situation come up, I was observing a game, and somebody used the Animus to cause the model to have its attacks before its normal movement, so that it didn't trigger an effect that ended at the end of its movement. I think it was Dark Sentinel or something. And I was just like, well, because they had gotten a model in base, but it was going to activate and get Dark Sentinel. And instead they were like, Lurker, movement hasn't happened yet, killed you.
That's really smart. I've never thought of that use. That is definitely a very corner case use, but it is effective.
Catch by surprise. It can dig in, right? That's cool. Yeah. that doesn't happen often, I imagine.
And you can never forget about his Reach POW 12 Poison Tail.
Yeah.
Either. That thing dishes out a lot of damage to living targets, and if it spawns from the pot, it's a missile that can definitely kill a Warcaster if they're not careful.
A lesser with reach is just a neat model from terms of, you know, engaging things, because all the things that remove engagement, you know, Signar and Lightning Strikes and stuff, are presuming the one hit point guys. But
yeah,
if you run a lesser up to engage people, they need to hit it with probably a Charging Weapon Master.
Definitely.
Fair enough. Let's move on to the Nephilim Bolt Thrower. What do you got to say about this guy?
When the Bolt Thrower first came out, I was kind of worried. It was 6 points. It was a lot. However, it was a POW 14 with a crit knockdown, and it pushes you back D3 on hit. It doesn't make it into many of my lists right now because Naga came out, but it still does make it into one of my lists, makes it into the E Lilith list, just to have something that can keep either heavies away from me on the approach if they're running multiple heavies and I can't take them all out, or to shoot, you know, the Gorman or that solo that you need to fire.
So when this model first came out, Brian came up, and I'm going to paraphrase here because he's more decorous than this, but he said, "In your face, I'm going to shoot that hatted jerk." And from then on, he had a way to handle Gorman, because previously games with Legion with Gorman were hilarious. You'd be like, he blinds something. Nothing can kill him. He blinds more things. They're like, I wish this would stop happening. I can hit him with seven different sprays and, you know, fireballs and stuff. But
I've lost so many games because of Gorman. I hate that model.
Yeah.
Go die.
I've heard people tell me that other models are the best solos in the War Machine half of the game, and I'm always tempted to be like, you're correct. Please don't play any more Gorman. I tremble in fear at whatever else you're pitching.
I feel like Gorman is the best 2-point solo in the game.
Yeah, no, I like to call him the Prince of Solos. I feel like most factions have access to one 2-point guy that might be better in their faction, you know, the Covenant for Menoth, or like there are a number of just faction-specific things that might be better, but he is the best mercenary solo, and in a lot of factions, he's still better than their in-faction stuff.
Like, I agree.
Joe might be better, right? In a Kador list that, you know. Well, fair enough. you said Nephilim Bolt Thrower gets in just one?
Yeah, he's in my E-Lilith list, and I was thinking about trying to make a Kalos list with a little bit more infantry just to see how it would go, and I would take out my Ravagors and just put 2 Bolt Throwers in instead of my range element and just saturate the board with more infantry.
I like the idea of Kalos flying. That just seems like really, a movie visual sort of a thing.
Oh, well, you wait until we get a Slay Lilith and she's flying in her sleigh.
Let's take a second to talk about your expectations of Slay Lilith, which, by the way, is an awesome nickname for her. Do you think she's going to be as good as her previous versions, or you think the battle engine is going to just turn out not to be a thing you want your warlock on?
Can I tell you with this off the record?
No, we're on a podcast.
Ooh.
I mean, I've got no editing skills. If you have secret spoilers, you probably shouldn't reveal them to the universe forever.
Well,
we can talk about it later.
Okay, I do not have much to say about her. I just hope that because she's a battle engine, that she's not overbalanced to compensate. That's the only thing I'm hoping.
Yeah, well, it could go the other way. I remember it was a huge deal that certain models were large-based back in Mark I because it couldn't be screened right, and they all got crazy nonsense to make up for it. You know, Terminus still goes around sack-pawning things.
Mm-hmm. Did he have sack-pawn in MK1?
Yeah, I think he did. Oh, yeah, I remember it was in his origin story. Kel tried to shoot him, and he apparently was like, I better block this POW 10! And he picked up a zombie. Nephilim Protector.
With the release of Gargantuans, I do think that this guy's going to get a little bit more use than he had before to suck in those high POW shots at your, you know, 11, 18, 46 life Gargantuan. But typically he's not played in a lot of lists. I have a team event coming up at Adepticon where he's in the list because we're just trying to do something kooky. But otherwise, he does not make any of my lists.
Alright, that's fair enough. The first time I saw the model was in that giant 400-point game. I required that Brian play every model in his faction. So a Nephilim Protector appeared on the table and wandered around. I think it was ultimately killed by a Wold. He's got the Empathic Transference, he's got Shield Guard, he's got Set Defense, which is a good thing to have, but he can't fight. He's got a POW 1, POW 12 attack, and that's all.
12-18, with no shield.
Hey, say it for Safeguard, though. Safeguard is cool because it doesn't cost anything for the guy himself to cast it. That's something, I guess. Threshold 10's also nice. What about his more offensive cousin, the Nephilim Soldier?
The Nephilim Soldier is... he's just one of those pieces that it's never really sat well with me. He has some good synergy with the Hellion. He has a POW 14, and we have a lot of things in the faction that can definitely bump that up. However, because he's just a melee light, he gets outshined by most of our heavies in our faction.
I like his Animus. Massacre is a free charge. That's kind of hard to find in Legion.
It is, but again, it does cost you Fury.
True.
And our Warlocks have better defensive stuff to be casting, I think, than an offensive spell or Animus that gives you just a free charge.
That's fair. Tell me you have never thought to yourself, man, if only we could have Nephilim Karn. You know, I mean, the Cyclops Shavage turned into the game's best heavy. What would the Legion version look like?
Oh, I'm still holding out for more Nephilim in the faction, though, and possibly even a heavy one.
Oh, that, yeah. It could only be great, right? I mean, they just look so cool. Even the Protector, they have amazing looking models. They're Dragon Men. Every part of that is great.
I think it looks pretty good.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. But no list for the Nephilim Protector or Soldier?
No, not right now.
Yeah. What about the Rake? I've actually seen this guy a couple times.
So the Rake makes it in a lot of my lower point cost lists until the Afflictor came out. It was in, say, a list for the approaching stealth model that can jump and get Blightbringer put onto him. He was also really good for the slams and headbutts. And until Absolonia got nerfed, he was the playing god lock target that would get behind you and end your miserable heavy's life.
Hey man, you're not the only one who misses locks with light models. I used to have World Watchers lock Colossals. It was glorious.
So yeah, just up until, you know, all the nerfs, he was in a couple lists, but now he hasn't been any.
Yeah. Jumping models are always great, but I can kind of see where it's come from. Recently, I tried to shoot him with a boosted Earth Spikes for Megalith, only to be told he had stealth. Embarrassing to have forgotten everything about a model, but I totally was like, oh, Rakes? I guess they exist.
I mean, a lot of people forget about the stealth. I've had a lot of opponents take random shots and like, oh, it has stealth. And then they charge in at it, and you put Tenacity on it, it's a 16, 15, they're like, oh.
Yeah.
It's really hard to hit for a light.
Yeah, I need to send in the sort of thing you need to send in to kill a heavy to kill this guy, and then you've got the peace trade in your favor.
So he's definitely 4 points. He's definitely worth it right now due to the Afflictor being out and just maximizing my list. He's not in there.
That's fair. So we've had three lights in a row that didn't get any. Something tells me we're going for four. What do you think about the Tariff?
So the Tariff initially before the Ravagor came out, I had two of them in my Elilf list back in 2010. They definitely have come a far way from MK1. They AD now.
Yep.
They have Rat 6 instead of Rat 4. Well, the only drawback is now they don't have poison on the tail anymore. And with the release of the Bolt Thrower and then the Ravagors, these guys definitely got pushed to the side. So they don't make any of my list right now. However, at one point in MK2, I did run multiples.
Yeah. Well, we got some new guys to talk about, too. What do you think about the Afflictor?
The Afflictor is an amazing model. I used it this weekend in multiple lists at TempleCon. For a 4-point model with reach, it's a flying, first off, a flying slammer, which you can never just push to the wayside. You have to always remember that it's a flying slammer that can get into weird places.
True.
Second, for 4 points with reach, I've never had a game, unless I specifically threw it away, that it never made up 4 points. It gets in there, you can kill 1 to 2 guys. That's about a 1 point worth of models destroyed. It puts a 1 point model into play that can then go and kill another point or two worth of models immediately. So right there, you have a three point swing already in your favor, and by the next turn, this model has already made up more than its point value.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't really considered it. I kind of looked at it and was like, eh, it's a fighting light. But you know, the way it produces models, that you got something going there. That's not wrong.
So it's just like the spawning vessel. You want to try to deal with it as soon as you can, and just don't let it make just 1 point guys that are just making free attacks. You cannot have that happen. You have to focus on it. You have to get rid of it.
About how many lists do you take them in, and do you take more than one?
I only take one right now. It's mainly in my Saiyan list that I ran at TempleCon. It's also in my 35-point Evail list. So I'm going to try to find more ways of working into my list, but I haven't had much time to really think about it yet.
That's still an impressive showing for a model that just came out. What about the Naga Nightlurker?
So
the forum erupted when this model came out. I was told that it was the only mistake that Privateer had made in Mark II.
So I don't believe that. All I did was I also have the banner Naga Apocalypse, but just because everybody was doom and gloom over it at TempleCon,
yeah.
I didn't run Elilith, and it's really mainly in my Elilith and my Absolonia list. I run it in two lists, and
two lists is legit.
It looks pretty good for a light, but again, it's a light. It's there for its Animus. It has crit Shadowbind on the bite, crit poison on the range attack, very effective with Light Warbeast it is. It dies really easily. It's a 13-15.
Yeah, I've never seen anything with worse defensive stats than that thing. It's like 13-15, no hit points.
The Afflictor is a 13-15 with 18 life.
Yay.
So, I mean, the Nagas are a very, very good model. People, when I was at TempleCon playing in Masters, were even like, wow, you don't have any Nagas in your list and you're playing against all this Menoth. I don't feel it's a linchpin that has to be in your list. I feel like a good player can get around all those things because at one point in time, we didn't have access to the Naga. We somehow played Menoth then. We can still play Menoth now without the Naga.
Well, I don't know. I've certainly seen you posting some impressive results, but I've often observed that the way that I compensate for defensive animi when I bring Circle out is to lose to them. You know, like sometimes I'm like, man, I sure wish Defender's Ward wasn't killing me, but there's really nothing to be done in this circumstance. Oh. Is that all the light beasts in the Legion? Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. What do you have to tell us about the Angelius? I was a bit foolish. I thought that this thing's day was over when the Scythian came out. I was like, yep, back it up. Angelius
is Angel, done. The Angel is, when it first came out, there's a lot of form arguing between the raw damage output of a Scythian compared to the raw damage output of an Angel. The Angel has a lot more to lose on its initial attack. It gets boned by anything that prevents special attacks, and it sucks when its mind's out, but it shouldn't be out anyway if it's not dead. Very, very solid Warbeast, very good in scenario play. With 2013, it's in my Saren list. It's in my Evail list. With Saren, I was winning scenarios 5-0 on control points.
They get into zones.
They get into zones. They push models out. They threaten. They can't be ignored.
Yeah, they're impressive. Do you have any of these? Any of these lists have them double?
Saren and Evail.
Nice. The old two angel list. I remember there was a nickname for that way back in the day, but I can't recall what it was.
I don't remember either.
Druids hate these guys because they're serpentine. So you can't really drag them out on their ass. They're always def 14.
Yeah, you can knock them down, but I mean, if you can just drag them forward a couple inches, that can be the difference between them dying to your stalker or not.
Yeah. Overtake is also just a cool ability to just have in a Warbeast. And fun trivia, it works on free strikes.
They are, what works on free strikes?
Overtake.
I thought it had to be during this model's activation to get overtake.
Nope.
Oh, interesting.
That is true for, like, sidestep and stuff, but, overtake isn't, which can be really bad when you're trying to, like, walk away from an enemy warcaster that has it and, you know, get him de-engaged or something and he's just following.
That's interesting.
I seem to recall Raven has, like, a snapshot or something that's a similar gig.
The Angel is a utility heavy, plain and simple. Repulsion's amazing. He can shoot stuff on the approach. He has a way to do one big blow to a high armor heavy. He does everything you need to do. The only problem is that he is a little squishy. He only has 25 life, but he makes up for that in his high defense.
Yeah, I feel your pain there. He has the exact same defensive profile as the Warwolf Stalker.
And I think they have the same amount of life, too.
Yep. Yeah, 14, 17, 25. Something 25. Is on it, it's dead.
Mm-hmm.
They're long threading beasts, so things don't often get on them. And of course, a hand cannon that can target stealth models is not to be despised.
There's also an angel on my Absolonia list, but I mean, every Absolonia list has one.
Yeah, that's the guy who gets the +2 defense spell.
Yep.
What about the old school dragon? What about the Carnivian?
So the Carnivian, when the Scythian came out, the biggest argument was that for 2 less points, you have a Warbeast that has reach and has a chain attack, and a really good animus to take out Tough. The Carnivian, his animus became more mainstream when people started playing Pythagoras again, just because Spiny Growth is just so tilting when you have a +4 armor.
Oh, yeah,
when an enemy model comes into you, so now your armor 18 heavy is armor 22.
I have no disrespect at all for the Carnivian's animus.
If you have a way to buff up his mat and wrap, I mean, a spray 10, pow 14 is not bad at all.
It's Terminus is spray.
So, it is definitely a rat 4 spray, which is the only drawback to the Carnivian. You typically see him in a lot of specific builds that gear towards more armor, unless you're trying to abuse his spray. I have him currently in 2 lists, He is in my Pythagoras list, and he is in my Ethagoras list.
That makes sense. Thagrosh likes dragons. Carnivians like the damage bonus from him.
Mm-hmm. And then with Ethagrosh, you can have the models always be armor 22 against both melee and range because you stack Dragon's Blood with Spiny Growth.
Yeah, Spiny Growth. And of course, he is the creator of a +2 armor thing that is not a spell.
Correct.
So your warlocks can have more armor if, you know, Kallus or whoever wants to fight people. which is not recommended, by the by. Ravagor. How many lists do you have Ravagors in?
Holy crap.
Is this the winner?
This is the winner heavy. This Ravagor completely changed our faction. Before we were about threat ranges and using Slipstream to get models to you. When this model came out, it completely changed the approach, and now we have a range 14, pow 15 heavy that's saying, hey, you either come to me, or I'm going to blow you off the table if you just sit there.
Yeah, that's the same range as my Colossal's gun. And same pow too.
It's pretty good. With a Scather and a fire, auto fire.
And for goodness sake, it's Eyeless Sight. Range 14 anti-stealth thing changes the game for a lot of armies because that stealth model standing behind the lines can get shot in the face, and you're like, I did not expect that.
The Ravagor completely warped all Elof lists when it came out. I have two in my Evale list. I have one in almost every other list made, so he is definitely the winner when it comes to heavies.
Fair enough. The other two were kind of competing evenly, but the Ravagor just blows them all away.
And it's even better when you have somebody that can augment his melee capabilities as well.
Yeah, because he is very pillow-fisted. Mat 5, pow 16 is, it's the same as, I think, my goats. But the new guy on the block is also pretty impressive. What do you do with the Scythian?
The Scythian makes a lot of lists. He's just 9-point reach, beat stick heavy, and he's really good to start initiating your peace trades. Takedown is really, really good against specific matchups, the troll matchups, the e-gaspy matchups to get through and try to remove all the banes from play.
Mm-hmm.
The Scythian makes it into almost every one of my lists, just like the Ravagor.
Got it. So those two are probably your classic, you know, your version of the Stalker / Pureblood.
Yeah, they are definitely the two heavies that make it into most of my lists.
And there's really no reason they shouldn't. I'm an admirer of the Scythian. The Pathfinder bit is excellent.
Pathfinder, Eyeless Sight, Reach, Bloodbath, Takedown, holy crap.
Yeah, it just goes on and on. He's got a lot of hit points, too. What is he, a 30 boxer?
Yeah, all the carny body guys have 30. And then the other guys, the winged guys, have 25.
What about... If there is one beast that makes me jealous for Legion, if there is one that I would draft in a circle wholeheartedly, I want that Seraph, man. What do you do with the Seraph? What do you think about it?
So, the Seraph used to be played a lot until the Ravagor came out, and like I said, it completely tilted how Legion played because we no longer had to create those threat ranges to come to you. Slipstream is such a amazing animus, and if you play it so much, you become dependent on the 2-inch plays.
Yeah.
I suggest people don't play with it for a while if they're that dependent on it, just to get a feel for how it is not having it. And then when you go back and use it again, it completely warps how you play. I have it in one list right now, two lists right now, an Ethag list and a P-Vale list. And because I don't play with it all the time, when it's there, it completely just changes everything. I see so many more angles to kill people with. I can get my models there. Threaten a lot more.
It's an impressive model, man. That gun is nice. D3 plus one shots.
And it's really good with P-Vale because she can augment his damage output.
I'm an admirer of this beast. 14-16 is not the best threat stat line, but only 8 points. I mean, as you say, P-Vale loves it. Also, it can make her threat range go to the preposterous levels with Slipstream. It's just a nice beast.
The reason why it's 8 points is Slipstream. I mean, that's like a 2-point animus right there.
No, its chassis is alright. It can shoot stealth models like everything else in Legion. But it's all about that Slipstream, man. There's a 2-inch placement, so there's your inch threat range. But unlike Rush or, you know, Bounding, that's not the animus that has to be on you. You can then get another animus and then, you know, go off and do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it works on things that aren't beasts. It's just a great animus.
It is.
I guess we're down to the character heavies. What do you think about Typhon?
Typhon is... he's a special heavy.
Yeah.
He's always in my P-Veil list. There's no reason not to take him with P-Veil unless you're trying to take a double Ravagor approach. But having the 22-inch threat range with a gunfire charge, leash, and slipstream, triple sprays kills so many casters dead if you're not worried about it.
Absolutely.
And then you can augment that even further by having Chiller next to the target by running your Raptors off.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I run Raptors with P-Veil.
I've lost games to Typhon a lot. Like, P-Lilith parasites me and Typhon sprays me to death. And I'm like, well, I wish that didn't happen. Shoot.
So, I mean, he's a 13-17, so the armor's kind of low for a 12-point heavy, but he brings utility. If you need him to spray, he can spray. He's in my E-Lilith list. He's in my P-Veil list. He's in my P-Lilith list. He's in all those different lists to help augment what he does. If I need a backup melee heavy, he's there. If I want to pin cushion a target, hey, here comes a feat turn 4 sprays. I'm boosting all my damage rolls. Things like that. He has so much potential.
Yeah, he's got another defensive animus, but you already have tenacity and, what's it called? Spiny growth. I imagine those are usually used more often than excessive healing.
The only time I use excessive healing, is when I'm going to be hit by a lot of low POW attacks.
Mm-hmm.
A good example would be like Mage Hunter Strike Force with P-Veil.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can put Tenacity on myself, it'd be 16-14, where they do 3 damage a hit, or I can put Excessive Healing on myself, where every once in a while, those damage rolls aren't going to be significant, and I'm just going to heal instead.
If the enemy is going to put the Sorcerer's thing on you and try to one-point you down, you could be ready for them.
Oh,
that'll never work. it's too bad it isn't at range. It seems like the sort of thing that'd be great on a Gargantuan.
I mean, it is. I mean, in some lists, you could take the Hellion and use a bunch of models auto-plink. You could shoot a storm wall with some raptors, and now you're doing a point apiece instead of doing practically nothing.
Yeah, it's not terrible. Typhon, 12 points is rough, but like you say, he's made into 3 lists. That's not nothing. What about your other character, Abby? What do you think of Proteus?
So, I finished my articles on it. I just have to edit it up and post it. But Proteus, definitely, for what he brings to the table, he's kind of lacking. He makes it in with 2 lists, on at least a semi-regular basis. He makes it in with a non-tiered Rias list because it helps augment the control range issue that she had to allow the Scything to reach out with the feet and place outside of the control area.
That is something.
With P-Veil, you have the Leash Slipstream Advanced Drag, which is a 17-inch threat range that you can pull a target to you and kill you, or you can use Rampager to pull Beast forward and then have him rear arc pull them even closer to you so you kill it.
Get them into insight range.
Yeah, so it is definitely, he has promise with P-Veil. However, when you put him into the list, you're siding out either your Scythian or your Ravagor. And that's a real big trade because he doesn't have good reach, he has fake reach.
Yeah. If he misses with that initial, his claws are wasted and he has to buy another initial in an attempt to get him to drag it in.
And if you're trying to go max threat range on something you can't move, you're going to hit him with a bunch of POW 14s and not 16s.
Yep. I mean, there was a lot of dismay from Brian when Proteus was revealed, and I think it's warranted. I have trouble thinking of a time when I wouldn't be more terrified to see the original Carnivian than the altered version.
Some of the cool things with him, though, is that you could, with Dark Sentinel, pull a model out of melee with Veil, which is cool with his pull. Snacking might be okay on the Archangel. If you're not
makes
trying to
sense, sure. Yeah. I hadn't considered that, but I guess you could put snack on him and then have him use the claws, which gives the absurd fact that he can't eat with his mouth, but he eats with his hands.
So, I mean, it's okay. He has uses, but he's not a Scythian, he's not a Ravagor. He's not going to be in every list, and he's a character.
Well, you put him in 2, so that's, I think, as much as he deserves. He's got the same as the Carnivian, same as the Angelius. You know, he's a legit guy.
Fury 5 is something to be said, though. He is
true, true. And as you mentioned, he's got hurting, so he can go off on his own. That's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. So that's all the basic beasts. Let's talk about the huge base stuff for a second. What do you have to say about the Throne of Everblight? Does that make it in any lists?
The Throne of Everblight makes it into 2 lists. I have an Ethag list that I run with it. I also have a Pthag list I run in it. With Pthags, you just armor it up and get it to armor 23. In your aura, and it's really, really good at soaking up the low POW infantry charges, Even a heavy charge at armor 23, they're normally dice minus 3 or 4, so they're boosting and using resources to try to get it off the table. With 3 base attacks at POW 15 and Battle Wizard, it can definitely clear a lot of space on the table. So I've heard a lot of people say they don't like the model, how it looks. I love how it looks. I like how it plays on the table. It is one of my favorite Legion models.
I like the 4-inch reach on it. I'm ambivalent about how it looks. I think it fits in with some Legion armies, not others, but I can definitely see why you would you'd love the way it plays. I mean, it's just cool the way it can threaten anywhere.
It's definitely one of my favorite models in Legion.
You say you've got it in 2 lists now?
It's in P-Thags and E-Thags. With E-Thags, I just use it as a leapfrog it with him. So E-Thag stays behind it. It's armor 23 against everything with Dragon's Blood and Spiny Growth. And then he'll leap off of behind it to do something, and it'll try to find a way to get back in front of him.
Well, it's a flyer, right? You can just charge over.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting thought. Could you take it with Ryas and just the distance would be preposterous.
Now, when it was first coming out, that was the big thing. Everybody was like, oh, the 4-inch Reese and Ryas's feet with the place is so powerful. But you have to look, it's still Mad 7, so it needs to get tokens to do anything.
True.
To threaten a caster unless they're really low armor. And only at Mat 7 is going to have a hard time hitting defense 16, miss defense 15 most of the time as well. So,
true.
Not to mention placing a 5-inch template is a lot harder than people think.
We had a funny conversation. Ryas's feat is not optional. So if you were to have this thing punch someone who is surrounded by other enemy models, what would happen at that point in time?
You would not be able to place and you would forfeit your feed placement.
That's fair. We were thinking maybe you would lose the battle engine, or maybe it would push things out of the way. Like, could you then choose where it got pushed from? I mean, like, a lot of really weird rules interpretations seem like they would happen, but that makes much more sense.
There's a lot of stuff you're even making me read because I didn't know that the feat wasn't optional.
No, it's quite mandatory. Can he still battle wizard if he eats things? I seem to recall he consumes things whole. Takes their tokens away. Is that not him? I might be thinking of something else.
He does. He also consumes when he kills living models. He removes them from play. He doesn't really consume them.
Right, yeah. I mean, only a couple people consume. So does Battle Wizard work off remove from play, or is he another
for
one?
For his specifically, it does.
Nice. I know there are some people in the world who are like, why? Terminus can't Ravager the Kraken because its first 3 attacks eat things. He's like, I wish that this wasn't mandatory. Fill up on tokens so you can stop doing this. Well, what do you think about the main dragon, the Archangel?
I was on a podcast the other day talking about the Archangel, and in the grand scheme of things, it's for 20 points, Colossals make sense in War Machine because you're focusing all your focus to one target and focus is, you're limited. Fury, on the other hand, it allows you to buy more attacks, boost damage rolls, things like that, and having more Fury to be able to spend means that on that one big turn you can have more offensive output. On this Archangel, you're basically taking away one of your heavies and having Fury 4 instead of 8 Fury.
Yeah.
So that's the first strike you have against most of the gargantuans in the game. Augmented by it's 20 points, has a very low threat range 10, rat 5, and has ride by attack, which is good, but for 11, 18, 46 life, is it really worth 20 points? I don't think so.
46 is brutally low life, and I don't know how other people target their tolerate their gargantuans being targetable by spells.
The only good thing about it is the ride by attack, the POW 19 main attack with consume. You can get rid of those random solos.
The Harbinger can't martyr for her stuff.
That is right. And
you can eat the book. Nothing can stop it from happening.
And with Absalonia, you can get it up to defense 14, and with P-Thags, you can bring it back with your feet.
That's good stuff. It's got to be admitted. I like its gun. It's not nothing.
It's range 10, so, I mean, you ride by attack. It's
really range 13, right? You move up 3, shoot, back it up.
Yeah, but he takes up such a big footprint on the board that when you back up, you could be blocking a lot of your own models. And
yeah. I always play my gargantuan to the side for that very reason. Like, if you put them in the middle, oftentimes you're like, get out of the way, you 20-point piece of thing.
So, but let me tell you something that's good about him is that with ride by attack, if you move up at a heavy that has admonition, you're still in your movement phase, so you have an admonition. So you can go up and hit him a couple times and then move away and be like, okay, you can admonition.
Yeah, go ahead, tough guy. Now that you're dead, admonition.
And then you can also 2-inch reach, lock heavies, lock their weapon arms, yep. And if they don't have a non-reach weapon or you're locking their reach weapon, they're not going to do much against you.
I've got your hand, Avatar.
That's right.
I love the fact that the Archangel's Animus is like feral Animus levels of what? I mean, under what circumstance would you ever be like, then my caster casts Draconic Flames?
For two Fury,
now you're in trouble.
One of the worst anime in the game, if not the worst.
Well, Bang of Chaos, man. I mean, we've got the Feral. It might be worse.
Does that remove Fury or add Fury?
It removes Fury. If it add Fury, it'd be excellent. But you can put a Feral within 8 inches.
Cause damage on the caster. With this Animus, you cast it for two, which is half your Fury, for the hopes that an enemy model is going to end within two, in the hopes that in two turns, they don't, their fire doesn't go out.
Well, what if... No, Saren's Feet doesn't work on it, does it?
No.
Okay, I'm having a tough time thinking of a circumstance in which, what if you use it on the caster? Kallus charges into battle, slashes some dudes down, he's got sprint on him from Rorsch. He moves, he then sprints up, is it cast only on self, right? Shoot. Okay, this is becoming too complicated. I guess the sprint prevents it. Okay, no, I can't imagine a circumstance in which this guy's Animus would be cast.
You will never cast it, and people that said they do, I'll just assume they lied.
Yeah, the terrible players. I mean, there's the occasional, like, and then while I was winning, I decided to do something gratuitous so I could say I did it. But it's not a right way to spend two Fury.
No, not at all.
Poor guy. But if you have a painted Archangel, playing with your thing, how many of these lists does he make it into?
I have actually a P-Lil Tier 1 and a P-Thag list right now that has the Archangel in it.
There was a version of his stats spoiled earlier that included like a 4-inch reach POW 15 tail. We were all deeply hoping about it.
There was a lot of stuff that I heard about him, as in range
flaming
12.
Fists.
Range 12 attack, it was just so upsetting.
Yeah. But he is what he is. I think that there's probably things. You've given him two lists, it's the same as the Angel, right? He's legit. Just one of those circumstances where you look at the model and you're like, man, how come the Stormwall is the guy who's in every list and his model is not half as cool as yours?
No, this model definitely wins in the best looks category.
I think it's the best looking model in the Privateer line. It takes over from the Skinwalkers who I previously was enamored with. And that's the end of all the things that aren't Warlocks. So the Warlocks, as you probably know, are a little bit different from the other stuff. Rather than saying how many of them you have on the list, because that wouldn't make any sense, what we do is you have to divide the Warlock into top third of goodness, bottom third, and middle third. You get three bottom thirds, and the other two are each four. Because you've, got 11 total.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you have to say about flip? Probably going to be Absalonia, right? Yeah. Absalonia, the terror of Everblight.
Absalonia is definitely a middle-tier warlock. She gets boned by those purification casters, anything that can remove the upkeeps off your guys. Her feat is situational in that you're hoping that your opponent doesn't push hard enough to remove your beast from play before you use the feat.
That's true.
However, she still has enough spells to be a threat on the table. I bring a very balanced list build with her that has just three heavies, the Naga, and then the Shredder, and a bunch of utility solos to shoot down those annoying two guys on the approach, and then the spawning vessel to kick more stuff out.
Do you ever find yourself using Blightfield?
All the time.
I like that it's placed. You don't have to target someone with it like Feast of Worms.
Nope. With the Colossal Heavy meta that's coming around, the double Stormwall Haley that you're seeing a lot, you can definitely change the course
awesome.
Of that match with just that spell.
Put that Blightfield where it catches them both and be like, nerds to you, Haley.
And then when they separate, then you can just keep on putting it on the bonded one.
Well, right, if you got to choose one. Let's see. Do you ever take your tier list?
I used to take your tier list a long time ago. It's probably the easiest tier list to make in Legion.
Add
I don't think
beasts.
It's effective because I don't like having the model count in the list to help protect you from a bunch of heavy jam and things like that. So no, I don't take it right now.
Okay. Is there anything that she takes that's really different from like what other people would take?
Anything that you're like, because Absalonia is in this list, I take X. I would imagine like a Carnivian might be more likely because she can give it reach and that sort of thing.
I always take an Angel with her just because of the defense 17 with Force Evolution. That's the big thing.
Makes sense.
And then if you feel wily, you can take Titan with her as the backup target for that, and he can be a 16 with Tenacity, or you can actually give him reach with
Oh yeah, that's awesome. She's probably the caster who hates most the fact that your beast can't push you.
Titan can push me.
Yeah, true. He can also frenzy on you, so careful. I've had Mozar feed on Typhon and have it just put a chomp on. It didn't kill him, but it chomped on P-Thag, something awful.
Same with the Nephilims. They're not,
Yeah, they can certainly push you. Yep. But who takes Nephilims? So mid-tier for Absalonia?
Mid-tier.
Fair enough. What about Bethane, the voice of Everblight, and Belphegor, her steed slash jacket slash, we could not believe that she wears it like a coat, but that's exactly what happens.
Last year, there was a lot of three list tournaments going around. It started with Templecon and Adepticon, and I took her to Adepticon. She was one of my secret warlocks that a lot of people didn't know I was playing at the time. I feel like she has a very strong game against infantry swarms. She has a very diverse spell list that, in the right situations, can just seem very powerful and. Overall, I just think she's a very well-balanced warlock.
I would tend to agree that her spell list is excellent, except for Bloodthorn. Do you ever cast Bloodthorn?
I do put Bloodthorn on Striders. I take Striders with UA.
Okay, I guess that makes sure that even if they have every armor, you know, two-thirds of them will die to the corrosion.
Or tough as well.
Ah, good point.
So, I run a very balanced list with her. I've run a 3-heavy version and a 2-heavy version, and the 2-heavy version right now is Ravagor, Scythian, Shredder, Warspears with UA, Hex Hunters without Bale, full.
Nice.
Strider with UA, and then the Succubus and two Spellmars.
Seems entirely legit. Is there anything that you would take with Bethane that might not be seen elsewhere?
The Hex Hunters. I mean, the Hex Hunters are the big one.
That's true. Do you ever get any crazy uses out of Belphegor? His immunity to all the elements is, I think, unprecedented. Nobody else is immune to all four, right?
No, there's a lot of things you can do with them. You can run them up there and shoot them with your Ravagor, so you can center a scatter where you need it. You can, if you're actually inside of him and you have a Seraph in your list, you can do the old slip slams.
He's also got a Despoiler, right? So he can put down his own super template. And it's 5 inches.
It is so good against Griggs.
It makes them so sad. They're like, I can't even reach attack you, you jerk.
Oh, you know, you can reach attack it if you're on the very edge of the five.
Right, because he's not a small base. Let's see. I guess he's an Arknode. So the last question that I asked for the Warlocks is, is this also a mid-tier Warlock?
Compared to everything else right now, I would rate her as a mid-tier, yes.
Okay, so that's two mid-tiers used. Do you ever take her tier?
I don't use her tier. I know a lot of people in tier-only events and even at some of the major conventions have taken her tier and have done well. I remember seeing Brian take her in Adepticon in the tier and do well as well.
Oh, yeah, I recall his tier list. It's got like three of those flying things. very, very aggravating. But it has been a while since we've seen Legion in Atlanta. I actually recently popped P. Baldur's feet to protect me from Angelius. It's just one of those totally like, whoops, bang.
Gotta tell Brian to come back. Come back to the Legion.
I'll tell him. No one wants more than I am to stop playing the Harbinger. I can't even begin to count the number of tournaments that caster's knocked me out of. What about Lilith, Herald of Everblight, the basic version?
I'm gonna rate her as a low grade caster.
Ooh.
Her spell list isn't bad. I mean, Eruption of Spines is really good. Bad Blood is a killer spell against hordes. Especially against Gargossles. And then Parasite is such a swingy spell. It allows you to power through those heavy armor targets and Colossals. The only problem is that she's so straightforward and so limited with 5 Fury. That in a lot of the top-end matchups that you see in conventions, she just doesn't have what it takes to power through an E. Haley or anybody like that, and she's very one-dimensional.
There's something about a caster when you're like, every one of her spells is offensive. Literally all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she can certainly pull a PK and just be like, I'm going to be shooting things.
She can, but again, you're still limited to the five here. You want to cast Parasite, there's three. You want to cast Eruption of Spines, there's three.
Yeah.
Do I boost a hit? She does have Witch Mark, which is good. You know.
Yeah. If the enemy survives, you can be like, I shoot someone and then Eruption of Spines, but or Parasite. But obviously, sometimes she kills the thing if she wants to put it on a unit.
Yeah. So I definitely rate her low just because she has one thing she does, and that's kill you. And she does it well with her feet, but a lot of people can play to that. And they know what she's going to do.
She has a melee attack still at this stage, which is
pow, seven,
something she'll get rid of.
Four or five.
Five. It's like Kane's sword. funny trivia. You might have heard this. I think it was on another podcast. But there's, what's-his-face? Jarl has an axe that's named Sword.
I did not know that.
His melee attack's name is Sword, but he's carrying an axe. It's apparently the name of it.
That's awesome.
Lilith, is there anything you take with her that you might not take with other casters?
I mean, I do like Typhon with her because she's one of the only warlocks that can augment his hitting ability and damage ability for his spray. So she can give him one really powerful turn, and you know it just like anybody else that the gunfighter charge, feet, parasited, POW 17 sprays can kill anything.
I've lost on top two from that. And do you ever take her tier?
Yeah, I do. I do tier one, with two units of Raptors and Anissa. And
that's kind of cool.
And you take Hex Hunters as well, because Hex Hunters work really well with her, with Parasite and her feed. They can clear out a bunch of stuff. I'm recently doing the Incarnation with an Archangel, just because she can't take Fury Management, so having multiple heavies, instead I'm going to make one heavy and a Shredder, so that I can just pull the Fury off the Archangel, and then have the Shredder to transfer to with, like, one Fury.
I guess that's something. She can always hide behind it, too.
Mm-hmm.
What about her epic version? Epic Lilith, Shadow of Everblight.
Epic Lilith is definitely a top tier caster. If not just for her feet, man. That feet and Shadow Pack are devastating to Retribution players everywhere. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
I mean,
Red doesn't like hordes at all, but then you start to being like, all my heavies are stealth and they shoot and they don't care that you're stealth. And they just like, I get to run and then pick models up.
Exactly. I mean, I haven't played Lilith in a while now, and it's because she is definitely not a fun warlock to play, and you bring her to tournaments when it's all serious business.
With capital S, capital B.
Oh, yes.
She does seem to have the same sin as her basic subversion, though. She is certainly a straightforward warlock. I think she's better at it, but there's nothing complicated whatsoever about Epic Lilith. You look at her and you're like, yeah, don't spend any Fury focus till the feat's over.
Yeah, with the release of the Naga and the Succubus, it definitely gave her what she needed that year or last year to be very effective. So now you had Wraith Bane, you have Upkeep and Shadow Pack for free, so you can throw out your Pincushion on a Colossal, and then you pass around the Naga's Animus, and you're just blowing into it with your feet, and not a lot can actually withstand it.
Yeah. Pursuit's a funny thing to have on a Colossal also.
Pursuit.
Just like, meh, I put Pursuit on your Conquest. You know, but
come at me.
It would like to do things, but every time it moves, I have to worry I've just killed myself because Typhon crept up on me.
So, I mean, Elilith is brings a total package in herself that I used to take a combined list with infantry like Raptors or Striders and then a couple range beasts. Now I take a lot of heavies, a couple lights, and pretty much no units or Deathstalker or solos like that because she brings everything she needs to remove those pesky low armor mid-defense units by just aiming on her feet turn. So she gets personally involved a lot.
Hey, Warwitch Sirens, VAP.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you take with her that you don't take with anyone else? Or that's like, you know, uniquely her thing?
Bolt throwers.
Mm.
She is my Bolt Thrower.
Gorman for POW.
Mm-hmm. She takes the Naga Bolt Thrower. My list that I've been running with her has been Typhon, two Ravagors, Bolt Thrower Naga, a Black Frost Shard, two Shepherds, Forsaken, Succubus, Feral Geist.
That's pretty cool. That sounds like a good list.
So it's a very beast-heavy list, and Typhon's in there for the backup, you know, heavy. So if something comes up to me, I can try to melee it down too. But having four sprays on feed turn that have, could have Wraith Bane and have Pain Cushion going. So ugh. Four boosted spray shots, it's really devastating.
Tears it up. Let's see, do you ever use her tier?
No, never ever.
Fair enough. What about our next warlock, Ryas, the Sigil of Everblight?
So Ryas is the most debated warlock from MK1 to MK2, because in MK1 she was ball-bustingly broken, and yeah. MK2 they over-nerfed her and beat her to the ground.
She certainly is desperately trying to stand up.
So, and unfortunately, I have to grade Ryas in the bottom tier. Recently, I've been playing a lot of her rear guard tier list, which kind of pushes her back up a little bit. With 2013, it's a lot about controlling the center point of the board, controlling the scenario zones, and with that list with AD Ogryn and Dash and Stealth first turn, you can do that. You can get up there and threaten your opponent. And it's actually been a pretty decent build for me. But in the grand scheme of everything, when you got to compare her to everything else and what she can handle, yeah. She definitely cannot handle what other people can handle.
Just some A-plus caster comes up on you and it's Edenegra feats, and you're like, oh, fantastic, let's dash nowhere.
Exactly. So, yeah. I mean, I like her rear guard tier list. Her first tier list, I've never played. I don't really care for it that much. She's one of the only warlocks that I take Proteus with for the herding ability in her non-tier. And that's pretty much it.
So anything she alone takes?
Proteus. She can take Proteus.
That's fair. Certainly it seems like Rapport would help Proteus out a bit.
It does. But I mean, Proteus can get in there on the feet and definitely kill a squishy caster, but he's really just there for the herding to get the report scything out there.
Yeah, that makes sense. It doesn't seem like there's all that much to say. You've mentioned you use her rear guard tier list where she gets Typhon and the Ogryn and stuff, but not the others. Do you ever in multicaster games go with Saren, have her be the ultimate Arcanode?
In MK1, I did that a lot, but in MK2, I've never done a two-caster game with those two.
Yeah. It's just a funny thing on the card that they're, you know, doing that.
Because the only thing that Ryze can cast through Saren are just Report.
I might throw Occultation anywhere. My sister may deliver it. Woo!
She's like, I'm up front fighting everybody. Get Stealth from the back.
Yeah, I sure better spend some Fury, otherwise this might be unfair. All right, well, what do we think about Saren, the Omen of Everblight?
Saren is definitely a top-tier warlock, if not the top-tier. It's debated between her or Yveil as the top-top.
Wait, Yveil? Well, I would agree that Saren... I think that Saren is the best warlock in Everblight. Brian thinks Peavale is, but I've never heard Yveil really argued over those two.
Saren, she has definitely a toolbox Bella, and her feet is just so annoying and hard to play against some factions. Sometimes you just put it down, and that feat alone makes you win the game.
Respawn, Breath Stealer, Blightbringer, oof.
Her spell list is just so devastating, and then on top of that, with the 2013 scenarios and everything being centrally focused, you can definitely get up there and control those and win on scenario, and I did that at TempleCon quite easily.
Yeah, makes sense. I like her assassination of just chugging knives at you. It's, you know, obviously not what you want to try. But she's always got that. It's
like she has Pow 8 daggers, rain 7.
Huzzah! Whop!
Take that.
Banishing Ward is a spell to have. Druids hate it.
I love it.
She's got her Force Bearer. She just has, like, some of the best casts in the game. They all have just all those extra little bits. Saren really shows that.
Like, Force Bearer was definitely something going from MK1 to MK2 that I was completely shocked that they actually gave her.
Yeah, you're like, def 16, and it's better. Okay, def 18?
Then you have Tenacity, right. It's 19, then you're in the Gobber Cloud, that's 21.
Yeah, Brian has lured people into snipe feeding on her when she's got Tenacity from her Shredder. She's like, well, I'm def 19, so you're going to be needing 13s, and I'm standing on a hill. 15s. Ha.
Definitely can catch people off guard, but she is definitely a top-tier warlock.
Yeah, it's too bad you can't respawn Archangels, but I don't think she would want to wear Archangel anyway, because her feet doesn't work on it. So now you've used two from every category, right?
Yes.
What do you think about Pythagrosh?
Pythagrosh, I'll put him in the mid-tier.
That's fair.
He brings, I want to say it's a skew list Circle definitely doesn't like playing against him. And you bring that list and you put it down on the table and you're like, do you have an answer to Armor 22 Carnivians?
Can How are you doing for hitting power, tough guy?
Can you remove my guy from play? And then if they say no, you can have a pretty good game of just walking all over them. Against Horde matchup, Bad Blood's really good. Spiny Growth's really good just in general. So I wouldn't say he's top tier because he does have problems with certain lists. Doesn't like to play against Crix. Anything they can remove from play kind of hurts his feet, things like that.
He's now got the ability to return the Archangel to play, and you always have that Mutagenesis Assassination if you're failing.
Mm-hmm. The Archangel thing is the big thing. So when we go to Adepticon this year, you're going to see tons of Archangel PFAG and Absalonia. It's going to be like the flavor of the month, the con.
Maybe. I am not sure the Archangel is going to be quite so popular, but it is an amazing looking model.
I guess we'll see how many people can actually get it painted in time.
Yeah. I've often noticed that Mutagenesis never hits.
when you try to go for it.
You'd be like, alright, I'm going for it. Miss. I'm going for it again? I no longer have the focus to kill you if I get there?
I think you only cast it once per turn anyway.
Yeah, I always think that Death Shroud doesn't work on non-living, but it certainly does.
It's even better when people upkeep Fog of War with PFAGs and they forget that it affects him too.
Yeah.
Oh, you're +2 defense. Oops.
Yeah, I probably should not have done that. Is there anything you just take with PTHAGS?
PTHAGS is one of the casters I take the Thrones with. He's one of the only casters I take the Carnivian with.
Yeah, he does love that Carnivian.
And Blackfrost Shard, too. He's the one that really likes Blackfrost Shard.
I like PTHAGS. He's a cool guy.
I took him all last year as my side behind, or my list that paired up with Evail, and, you know, it did really well.
Yeah, he does some work.
Circle definitely does not like playing against him.
No, Circle makes a big noise about how we're hard-hitting and stuff, but it's all in the beasts. If there's a thing that's lowering the power of our infantry, they simply stop killing anything. You know, we all know that Pow 9 can pierce the thickest armor, but Pow 7 is just, ugh.
You're talking about your Wolves of Orboros.
Wolves of Orboros, baby. Pierce the thickest armor.
Pow 9.
Oh, yeah. And don't worry, I brought Grail, now they're hunters. What? Alright, so there's another mid-tier. What about do you ever take his tier list?
I haven't really taken his tier list a lot. I guess with the War Spears and their UAs, you can. It was something I wouldn't really do, though. Two units of spawning vessels is something else, if you had more fodder infantry to really utilize them.
That's fair. What about Epic Thagrosh?
Now, for what Epic Thagrosh brings, you would think he'd see a lot more play than he has been recently, but he really hasn't been. He's a mid-grade caster.
It's your last mid-grade.
Dun-dun-dun. Oh, no. He's definitely a mid-grade caster. A lot of his lists in the past were really skewed towards Shredder Swarm. The list I've been using with him right now has a Carny, 2 Scythians, a Seraph, a Succubus, 2 Forsakens, and 5 Shredders. And what you do is that you just power up one Scythian to get armor 22, and you try to use Slipstream and send them in at a very heavy target with Manifest Destiny to try to peace trade. And at armor 22, they're going to put a lot of resources in trying to kill it.
Yeah, they have to.
And what you try to do is that at the end of it, after all the peace trading is done, you're going to come out with like a Carny ahead and Thagrosh.
Yeah. He's got that Terminus thing going on where he's like, look, at the end of the game, buddy, if you're a Warlock also, I will put you on the ground.
Yeah, he's one of the only Legion Warlocks that actually has an end game.
Yeah.
His tier list is it's fluffy, it's kind of fun. I take Grotesque with him, they get AD, and I put Incubi in them. But other than that, I would never play it competitively. I just have fun once in a while with it.
That's fair. No one ever says that all the games have to be competitive. I have noticed that Eruption of Ash, not enemy models.
Nope. You can protect yourself with your own Legionnaires or any other models you put in front of you to block line of sight or just prevent those pesky Kayazi or anything like that from getting to you.
You're trying to kill Scar in her feed turn, you can surround her and run up and beat them all to death.
Or you could also target a model that's not her with your spray and set her on fire.
Always nice. Unnatural Aggression is one of those spells that if they forget about it, you'll just suddenly win the game. But normally doesn't really come up.
Yeah, I don't normally cast it. I normally just cast Manifest Destiny. Dragon's Blood, and the occasional Scourge.
Yep. Having Scourge is a big deal. You know, full stop, it's a knockdown spell. This is a big deal.
And then with Aethags, with Seraph, you can get within 12 inches of their caster. You slipstream up, charge them. Before you make your charge attack, you Scourge them down, and then you just hit them 4 times.
It's not bad at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the Scourge itself is, of course, about 13. And Thagrash's feat is... I've seen it used to back away, and also, you know, to make the Shredder Swarm go deeper in, reposition for the frenzies you know are coming. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on with Thagrash's feat.
Yeah, I mean, it's a multi-purpose feat. If you want to go in deeper, you can. If you have to finish off the heavy, you can. If you need to pull your heavies out after dealing a lot of damage, you can do it as well. So it's a little better than P-Vale's feat in the sense that you can attack if you need to, but it's not as good because you're not avoiding free strikes.
No, I mean, it's a very mid-range feat. He's not mostly about his feet. He's a giant dragon that wants to smash you with his ridiculous batleth.
Yeah, it's kind of upsetting that he does not benefit from his feet either.
Yeah, I can see how that might be aggravating. Well, what do we think about Basic Veil?
She is a top-tier caster.
Absolutely.
She brings speed, threat ranges, damage output, and... She's just so good, and her feet is so slippery. She can get in and get out, and you can't do much about it. And if you're playing Hordes, it's even worse with Rampager. She's definitely a finesse caster. A lot of people had complained on the forums about losing with her and things like that. They just don't understand that everything about her is positioning.
Mm-hmm.
You want to get up there, and you want to get models within 9 to benefit from insight and just take them out. But at the same time, people get scared that if they're within 9, Vale's going to die. It's all about utilizing Dark Sentinel, your auto-hitting ball, and using your feet at the right moment.
Yeah, Brian's done some amazing stuff with P-Vale. I've definitely learned to respect this caster.
It is. She is my favorite warlock in the faction.
I think he agrees. Talion is a cool random ability that I always forget she has.
It used to be an upkeep spell, but if a heavy gets on you, you can Dark Sentinel with Typhon. If you don't crit pitch him, he deals some damage, and then it hits you once, and you try to Talion it, and maybe you take out a spirit if you're lucky.
Yeah. Could definitely happen. It's just one of those cool abilities that, you know, it's on the card.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that Leash, Insight, Hoarfrost, Leash, Insight, Chiller are the main spells. Rampager is obviously a big deal when it can happen, but, you know, that needs to happen for it to work. Obviously, War Machine doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Hoarfrost, I've certainly lost games because I've been crit stationaried by P-Vale.
Yeah, she has everything, and then she has Chiller, which is your defense debuff, and then she also has Insight, so she can give a +4 to hit, +2 to damage swing for her battle grouper, and it can be devastating. And she's one of the only casters I like taking Typhon with.
She's got that Fury 8. That's just a cool thing to have, too.
Mm-hmm.
Those are levels.
I don't really take the tier list with her. I have in the past, in tier 4 only tournaments. I wouldn't say it's the best thing to take. The tier 3 benefit of them not having a line of sight greater than 8 inches is kind of nifty, but I wouldn't say it's game breaking.
Yeah, I hear that. You mentioned Typhon is like the model that she's, you know, it's kind of signature about taking.
I've definitely
seen that.
Mat 9, POW 19, and Melee, or even up to Mat 11, but then with Chiller and Leash and Slipstream, his threat range is 22 inches on the Gunfighter Charge, and he can be up to a POW 16 on his sprays.
Good old Dark Sentinel. Vale was the first one that really broke through my wall of Krix Focus Camping Casters when Brian was first starting to get good with Legion, because used to be I could be like, well, Venethor Exoterminus will camp you out, but Vale was like, you won't camp me out, buddy, I won't.
There's not any game I've played with P-Vale where I didn't feel like I could power through and deal the damage needed to be dealt in order to win.
Yeah, she's an excellent caster. Moving on from her, you've still got a top tier and a bottom tier, and I can guess how this is going to work. What do you think about Kallus?
Am I really done with my middle tiers?
In the middle tier, you have placed both Thagrashes. You've placed Absalonia and Bethane. It's hard, right?
I know. If placing it like that, he would probably be... I mean, he has to go in the bottom tier, because I'm going to put Evale in the top tier. But I feel like Kalos, with the right tools, definitely has a place in 2013 Steamroller. His feed is definitely annoying and can be game-changing at the right time. It keeps models from getting to your heavies. You don't want to kill cheap models to give them more expensive models. His spell list, he brings a damage buff, he brings a hit buff, and he also has a built-in armor buff for troops. So he brings everything you need for an army.
It's just Legion doesn't want to field an army. They want to field monsters.
That's correct, and I feel like there is a place for him. I feel like with like Bog Trogs and things like that, in 2013 he definitely has a place. Just he's outshined by a lot of the better options.
Yeah, that's fair. I never thought of the Bog Trog thing. That's hilarious. But he's so cool. I mean, he's just this Dark Knight kind of a guy. He wants to beat everyone down. He's got flashing blade, and, you know, he sets things on fire, and he's just, you want to like him, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, I want to like him. His only issue is he's kind of boring to play. He's almost an autopilot warlock. You move up, do you cast Dark Guidance this turn, yes or no? Yes, camp on the rest. If not, cycle ignite, stare at the battlefield.
Yeah. He's got that Grail thing going on. You're just like, I'm feeling like a tough guy here. I mean, you know, chilling out, but I sure am not inciting. You know, I'm not dominating the battlefield with an iron fist.
Definitely not. So I'm gonna put, yeah, I gotta put him in the bottom, so he's in the bottom.
That's too bad. He's really cool. I like his model.
His tier list is, it's okay. You don't get the fury management, however, you get good board presence when you get your UAs with the unit. They get advanced move, so they can get up there and dig in right away and force your opponent to react to you if you go
first.
That's
always important. AD is one of the undervalued. You know, I mean, I often think that if you looked at games and looked at the outcomes versus who had the most AD, you'd be surprised how big of a predictor it is. Let's see. Kalos, anything in particular you take with him that you don't take with anybody else other than, you know, Incubi?
Not really. Recently I've been playing a Kalos list that actually has three Ravagors, and they just use the Ravagors and their scatter templates and his eruption to try to mitigate their troops so that I can get my swordsmen to their heavy.
Seems like that would work. It's the equivalent of Signar's everything is a covering fire list.
Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the game, I mean, Ravagors with Dark Guidance can actually hit stuff and threaten.
And with, what's it called?
Ignite,
they can do damage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a legit thing. I could see that. And then we've got the last warlock, Yveel.
So originally when Yveel came out, I was completely down on her. I was dogging her. She was actually kind of hard to get my head around for the first 2 months I played her. But then right before TempleCon, I was able to find a list that I liked with her, and it was her tier list. And up until her tier list, there was never a point in time where I was really looking at Legion tier list. I was like, oh, tiers, they're fluffy and boring. I didn't like them. And then I saw her tier list, and I built the one that I've been using all last year and part of this year, and it's the two angels, two Ravagor Scythian, Legionnaires, two Shepherds, and a Spell Martyr. And it is, and the Spawning Vessel.
As you say, and the pot.
And it has been nothing but amazing. Yveel spell list is amazing on angels. Purification skews so many different matchups.
Purification.
I mean, she brings everything you need except for your damage buff.
True.
So she's definitely my most comfortable caster. Not my favorite, but she's my most comfortable. I feel the most comfortable when I'm playing her.
That's fair. I definitely think purification is a spell that has to be respected. If a caster has it, then you can't take Morvana against them, just as an example of, you know, facts. Like, there's the fact that a caster has purification is automatically one of the more significant things about them.
And you look at the matchups and you're like, okay, well, if I play this and he picks that, I automatically lose. So
yeah,
it's almost forcing you to have to pick the other one.
And, I mean, refuge is a big deal. Legion can't have sprint, but they can have refuge. So, you know, there's that.
Mm-hmm. So, and then she brings a very legit spell assassination on the right armies. If you were talking to me like a year ago, I would never have been like, oh, there's going to be some caster that's going to obliterate you to death.
Yeah, right.
So,
like, oh, snap, obliteration.
Well, here she is.
Yeah, we played in a tournament, and I had to battle against this list, and I looked at it, and I was like, you know, I know Jake can win with a lot of stuff, but
I think I can handle Epic Veil. Spoiler, I didn't. but this is certainly a caster that has, well, you've been doing better with it than I thought you would have. Epic Veil, I looked at her and I was like, man, how'd you get worse going Epic Deer? Go back to basic.
And I thought the same way too when I was first playing her. I was very frustrated that my order of activation wasn't right. But then after a while, it just clicked. And with the new Death Clock format back then, it was just in and out. You just go in, try to hold scenario. The army's really fast because there's low model count, and you just attrition them out.
Twice I played people playing the exact same list as you after I played that game, and I was able to observe that it is apparently a finesse list, because I've seen people make some fairly graphic mistakes while playing Evail.
Oh, yeah.
So apparently you have inspired folks.
At Lock and Load, I actually played against my tier list multiple times in a row.
Awkward. You should just totally, like, not tell people your name. Be like, oh, interesting. That's a cool-looking list you got there.
We put it down. But, I mean, because I've played it a lot, I definitely know the linchpin to it when you play against a mirror match with it. You definitely have to take out those Ravagors.
I don't know if this is a universal thing, but whenever I run to an enemy circle list, I play very carefully and I try very hard. I'm not sure if you do the same for Legion, but...
When I play against Legion, even if it's not a mirror match, like, the two Warlocks I like to reach for are Evail and Elilith against Legion.
Yeah.
Legion Evail. really...
Elilith, yeah.
Legion really relies on their defensive Animi to help them have board presence. Tenacity helps Angels, Spiny Growth on Carnies, and when they don't have them, they die really easily.
True. Well, I think that wraps up all of the stuff, and we're a little over our 2-hour mark, so I think that'll pretty much do it for the Legion, review episode. You got any last, things, any predictions about future stuff that are totally cool to say, or?
I don't really have much to say. The only thing I can say is that to anybody playing Legion, don't ever feel linchpinned in taking all the power stuff if you find a combo that works. Play with it, make it work, surprise people with it, because a lot of this game is shock value. If people don't play against a specific combo or a model, people will be like, oh, what's that do? And then you're going to catch them off guard and you're going to be able to win.
Nothing like popping your feet and they say, what's your feet again? You're like, how did you go through the first turn of this game without realizing that you don't know what Mozart's feet does? This is going to be brief, dude. Yeah. All right, well, let's stop this recording then. Everyone, we'll talk to you next time. We start with the War Machine, faction reviews. Thanks for cutting on, Jake.
Thank you.
All right.